Don't forget.
You can always improve your chances to win by joining the RIF Cyber Crew today and score your totally unfair internet advantage.
Just log on to WRIF.com.
It's Ticket Blitz Thursday on the RIF. All day Thursday from your walk right in free station. 101. The RIF.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Bill Clinton proving one more time he'll talk to anybody for a crumb of attention as he talked to us again.
What about Jennifer Flowers? I mean, do you regret lying about her on 60 Minutes?
No, I don't. I don't think so. No.
Well, why not?
Because I wanted to get elected, and I just felt like if the nation's first big exposure to me was hearing about me spanking a big strange ass, yanking on a handful of her blonde hair, or staring at the tattoo on the top of her head, I don't think I would have been elected, and I just felt the battle for the direction of this country was more important.
What tattoo on the top of Jennifer Flowers' head?
It says, let go of my ears, I know what I'm doing.
Surely. Well, that just reminded me, on Oprah, you sounded like you really felt bad for Monica and everything she went through.
Well, as I said, they plunked that monster down in a hotel room, grilled her, then they were going to wire her big old sloppy, ever-expanded and I just felt terrible about that. I mean, that for flashing that quivering planet for an at me, that just ain't right.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff.
101.
Riff. Rocks. When it's 5 o'clock, it's time to rock with the Riff.
Weekday afternoons at 5, right here on 101 WRIF.
Your ride home rocks with Big Daddy Arthur P. Playing your Riff Rockin' requests. Call in your Riff Rockin' request to the Grand Poobah at 313-298-WRIF.
Email them to arthurp@wrif.com.
Hell, you can even fax them in before you ditch the office at 248-398-6219. Call for the tunes that you want to hear. Win yourself some killer Riff swag and let the ride home rock with the Riff's own Big Daddy Arthur Penalo.
Riff is the only station letting you pick your favorites and program the station three times a day at noon, 5, and 9.
It's your all-request Riff Rock and Ride Home with Big Daddy Arthur P.
On the Motor City's one and only, home of rock and roll.
101 WRIF.
Riff.
Rock.
This is WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
If I find out there's somebody on this elevator who's not talking back to me, it's going to be your ass.
Beat the hell out of me.
Hey, Jack?
Yeah?
Yeah, if you would.
Star, when he did songs like this and Peace Train and other things, I don't know. He used to play them on rock and roll stations. I'm not quite sure that he qualified as that. But in any event, you probably know by now that he, the plane that he was on coming from Britain to the United States was diverted from its destination, sent up to Maine, and then he was said that his activities could be potentially linked to terrorism. That's according to U.S. Homeland Security spokesman Brian Doyle. So I think we owe Homeland Security a debt of gratitude. I mean, I feel a lot safer because this guy is not in our country. Let's take our hats off to George W. Bush and Tom Ridge, head of Fatherland Security, because these guys are doing one hell of a job protecting us from people like Yousef Islam, formerly Cat Stevens. And by the way, I never really followed Cat Stevens' career too much. And the main thing, why do I always forget his name? Salman, yeah, that there was this fatwa, this death sentence pronounced on Salman Rushdie, an author, a death sentence, and Cat Stevens allegedly supported it. He says now that he didn't. Sounded to me like at the time that he had. But the evidence saying that he supports terrorism is shaky at best. He condemned the September 11th attacks. He says that Muslims shouldn't be doing kidnappings and things like that. So this is just another bungle by these morons that are charged with our safety. Well, maybe we shouldn't say that. Let's give maybe them the benefit of the doubt. Hasn't anything happened in this country since September 11th. So maybe they've been doing the kind of police work that's necessary to keep these right-wing religious criminals I'm talking about the Islamic ones now, you know, not the ones running the government of the U.S., but the foreign religious right-wing criminals that act out their political agenda by attacking innocent civilians. You know, who would do that, right, except for madmen and monsters? But remember, this is not a war on terrorism. It is impossible to have a war on terrorism. It is possible to combat terrorism and terrorists by police work, because these are criminal acts. You can't have a war. You have a war with other countries. You have a war with armies that have frontal positions and what have you. But this is just rhetoric, hyperbolic rhetoric to act to the benefit of the people making the statements, which, of course, is George W. Bush, who heads the administration that was asleep at the wheel during September 11th. Anyway, Cat Stevens being followed by a moon shadow, or in this case, I guess, Homeland Security. We're safe. He's out of the country. And even the Brits, Bush's buddies, didn't like it very much. British Foreign Secretary Jack Straw raised the issue with Secretary of State Colin Powell in person at the United Nations. Straw, quote, expressed concern that this action should not have been taken. I should think not. So how have these guys been doing that are charged with our safety? I mean, there seems to be any number of ways that someone wanted to do something to us again. Catastrophic, they could. I mean, all this money that's been diverted to this needless war in Iraq could have been used to safeguard ports and nuclear facilities and stuff like that. So I don't know. Nothing's happened. Should we give them high marks? Well, I don't know. Here's John Ashcroft's record. He's arrested about 5,000 people in terrorism cases. 5,000. Remember all those thousands of Muslims, Middle Eastern and South Asian people he plunked in jail, and they deprived of their rights, and they were assaulted in jail, and people didn't know where they were. I mean, it was something like out of the pages of a right-wing dictatorship. Right? But ultimately, we were told this was all for our own good. But one of the things that a country of laws does is to bring charges against people for violation of laws. So John Ashcroft has arrested 5,000 people. This is now according to David Cole writing in The Nation magazine. Remember, there was this case in Detroit. They finally convicted some people of terrorism. Middle Eastern guys, who really, you know, those were the profile and what have you, convicted three people, and then they had to throw the case out. David Cole says the Detroit case has had marked the only terrorist conviction obtained from the Justice Department's detention of more than 5,000 foreign nationals in anti-terrorism sweeps since 9/11. So Ashcroft's record is 0 for 5,000. 0 for 5,000. 5,000 people arrested, 0 convictions. Not very good, is it? Hey, by the way, this is a talk show, and if you'd like to join me, I'd be pleased to get you on the air at 313-298-WRIF. That's our number. Kind of started off unceremoniously here. I can't even find my little sheet that tells me what in the hell we're going to do. All right, I'll wing it like usual. In any event, I'm going to have tickets to give away. Got that coming for information on the incredible Michael Moore Slacker tour. But we are we're looking at a situation where we have the people that trumpet their major accomplishment. I mean, how can they do this? It's like it's Alice in Wonderland. Everything is reversed. Bush says the war in Iraq is going great and things are going to hell. They tell us we're safe from terrorism because of their actions, and they've got 5,000 arrests, 0 convictions. Oh, how about this one? You know, I was thinking, I have so many things here. I could probably take no calls from you whatsoever, and I could make none of my speeches and just read these articles that are so revelatory of the level of corruption and deception and lies coming out of Washington that you and me are almost superfluous to it. I mean, when it was really necessary, when the media should have been on the case right after September 11th in 2001, during the run-up to the Iraq War. They were nowhere to be seen. It was like living in the Soviet Union. Instead of a free press, we had Izvestia and Pravda. Well, now they're on the case, pretty much. But how about this little deal? So we got Homeland Security. I mean, they're not, by the way, we shouldn't just say that, like Ashcroft has had no victories. He's driven bongs off the internet and put Tommy Chong in jail. So he's doing pretty good. Kept Cat Stevens out of the country, and Tommy Chong's in jail. He may be out now. I think he got a year in jail for selling paraphernalia. But this is the kind of report that makes you think, are we just getting fleeced? I mean, I don't know why I put it like that. I know we are. Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge had investments last year in a number of companies with contracts with his department and others who want to profit from Homeland Security. What a surprise. Now, who's paying his salary? Where does he get the money to invest in these companies that are doing business with his department? Well, that's right. It's hard tax dollars. So he then buys Unisys and General Electric and Sprint and Raytheon. And it's not just general stuff. This is stuff like Sprint completed work this year on a new network for the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center. And Ridge had money in that. Raytheon, a subcontractor, on and on. So it's like all these guys are rich, so they all got investments. And so you could say, well, big deal. But no, these are specific to the Homeland Security Department that Tom Ridge is directly profiting from. Now, I always wonder, I mean, I always want to ask, like, conservatives, is this a lie? Or two things. It's either it's a lie, I just made this up, or let me see, where is it from? CQ, who is that? Oh, gee, I don't know where this is from. Go to check it out, CQ.com. And so there's two things. Either it's a lie, it's a fabrication. Tom Ridge actually would not benefit from the money that has to be spent. Rather than going to the social programs that are going down the drain with under Bush, that they're going into Ridge's pockets. So this is either a monstrous lie, or if you're a conservative, then you have to say it's okay. Because one thing these guys never do is they never say, yeah, we made a mistake. We blew it. I shouldn't have done this. I'm going to divest myself of all these investments. But should we be giving kudos, as I was saying earlier? Should we be saying, look, Tom Ridge, George W. Bush, John Ashcroft, on the face of it, you look like you are probably the worst news possible. You presided over September 11th. You put 5,000 people in this country in jail. You had no convictions whatsoever. The one major case you had in Detroit was thrown out because of prosecutorial misconduct, and on and on and on. So, but at least you say, hey, aren't we safer? There hasn't been any attacks on us. Well, this, according to the Los Angeles Times of this Sunday, the new face of Al-Qaeda, and they have a reporter in Rabat, Morocco. Authorities have made little progress worldwide in defeating Islamic extremists affiliated with Al-Qaeda, despite thwarting attacks and arresting high-profile figures. On the contrary, officials warn that the Bush administration's upbeat assessment of its successes is overly optimistic and masks its strategic failure to understand and combat Al-Qaeda's evolution. That last sentence again. Officials warn that the Bush administration's upbeat assessment of its successes. Doesn't that sound pretty familiar? As heads are literally rolling in Iraq, as the infrastructure crumbles all the more, as more and more American soldiers are killed, as hundreds and hundreds of innocent Iraqi civilians are killed by U.S. troops, as larger and larger areas become under the control of the insurgents. These are Iraqis, folks, right? The people that live there that don't like our neighbors from Michigan going in there at the point of a gun, telling them, well, you can't have this, or you should have this, or you have to have allegiance to this puppet that this foreign government has installed in your country. Well, how about you giving me a call? 313-298-WRIF. Let me see. What is stuck? All right, I can't do that because that one is stuck. Yeah. One thing. Yeah, let's just do a couple entertainment things. You know, I was thinking on the way over here. Excuse me, I wanted to clear my throat off the mic. Before this Bushko and his gang illegally seized the presidency in 2001, when the inauguration took place, we used to talk about a variety of subjects, and whether you should spank kids and, well, I don't know, you know, hunting, whether it's good or bad, and kind of stuff like that. But now, this gang's misdeeds fill every moment, every single moment of what's necessary to discuss so we can make some sense out of all this. Now, Michael Moore is launching a 60-city swing state tour, and he's in college and NBA arenas in 20 battleground states, and it's called the Slacker Uprising Tour. Now, you see these polls, either has Bush slightly ahead or Kerry and what's the other guy? Bush are neck and neck or something like that. But what Moore says, what Michael Moore says, you can go to michaelmoore.com. He's got incredible stuff on that site. Some of it's linked from mine. Is that these polls, one thing, some of them are skewed by the Gallup poll. The famous Gallup poll is now owned by a Republican Party activist, and who weights Republican voters in the poll heavier than Democrats. Very, very strange. I mean, very, very corrupt. Very typical. I mean, like Republican corrupt. Those are synonyms. Corruption, Republican. You know, those are synonyms. But hey, get Kerry in there, and I'll be on his case. Don't worry about that. Which I think will happen. So Michael Moore says that these polls ask, who do you favor of expected voters? Voters likely to cast a ballot. Well, Democratic Party, or Democrat, how can you put this? People registering to vote in traditional Democratic areas are up 250%, where Republicans have an increase of 12%. 250% increased registration in Democratic Party districts. So Moore is saying that if people vote, see, the Republicans want to suppress the vote. They would be happy if it was below 50%. And if it is, they win. Michael Moore says 56%, and that's what he predicts, and the Democrats win. Now, let's see. Calling it his Slacker Uprising Tour in an effort to get millions of traditional non-voters to the polls on November 2nd, the Oscar-winning filmmaker of Fahrenheit 9/11 and number one best-selling author Michael Moore announced today that he will embark on a 60-city tour to the 20 battleground states beginning September 26th in Elk Rapids, Michigan. Now, where's Elk Rapids, Michigan? He was there tonight. So, I mean, here I am in Detroit, the big city, Elk Rapids. Where the hell's that? And tomorrow night, I think he's going to be in Big Rapids. I was there at one, let's see, is this where, yeah, Ferris State. He's going to be at Ferris State tomorrow night. Or no, I'm sorry, 2 p.m., 2 p.m. Monday. And he's going to be at Wayne State University and I think U of M Dearborn. But I can't find on his site any of the times. Someone told me that he's going to be at the Wayne State University Gullen Mall, right in the center of campus. So if any of you students know anything about it, give us a call at 313-298-WRIF. By the way, when you call, are you giving me the peace sign, Dan? No, that's all right. Dan is telling me that it's line two, and we're going to be moving into our new building real quickly. We'll have computers and all that stuff. But I will write that down, Dan. All right, line two. Why is this happening? All right, let me go on with Michael Moore's tour a little. And he's going to end on Election Day in Tallahassee, Florida. Moore will be appearing on college campuses in their auditoriums, arenas, stadiums, and field houses. And he's already spoken in some places to 15,000 students. They estimate that Moore will speak to 600,000 students. This is incredible. Urging them to vote. And this is... is not desired by the Republicans. I can't think of, I should be able to put it in a much stronger way. They are tearing their hair out at the fact that all these students might register. because they could be key. And no matter what lies you heard on Fox News, college students, you can register where you are going to college. Foxhole News, dutiful Republican propaganda organ, was floated this untrue rumor that you couldn't vote where you were going to school. Well, you absolutely can. Let's see. Moore's show will consist of his monologue, interaction with the audience, and a few surprise guests. He'll read letters he's received from soldiers in Iraq. He's got a new book out called They Will Never Trust Us Again, Letters from the War Zone. Offer prizes for people who register to vote and conduct, quote, the world's largest karaoke sing-along to John Ashcroft's Let the Eagles Soar. It's almost worth going to see Fahrenheit 9/11 to see that moron, that loser who lost to a dead man in Missouri in 2000 and then was appointed attorney general, this religious nut, the Crisco kid, who anoints himself with Crisco oil whenever he's done something particularly odious as some sort of religious exercise. Anyways, at many venues, Moore will show as yet unseen clips from Fahrenheit 9/11 from the DVD. It's going to be released on October 5th. And give everyone present a chance to win their own pet goat. Should be a lot of fun, says Moore. So if you know where when they're going to be in the Detroit area, and you go to michaelmoore.com. So he's going to be at Wink Arena at in Big Rapids tomorrow, 2 p.m. You got to buy tickets, $5, Williams Auditorium box office. And the whole entertainment industry, except for a few crackpots, are lining up to oust George W. Bush. All the movie stars we love, all the rock stars we love. I mean, there's some country. I mean, if you're into country, there are a lot more for George Bush. Pearl Jam, who is heavily... In fact, they're on the... what is that tour called? VoteForChange.com or .org. I think it's .com. In fact, it's next Sunday. Bruce Springsteen's going to be here, the Dixie Chicks, a lot of other folks as well, and a lot of the other bands around Michigan. So anyways, you can go to voteforchange.com, and if you want to, actually you can download Pearl Jam's cover of Bob Dylan's Masters of War if you go to mustvote.com, mustvote.com. Whew. Wow, so much happening. All right. I've got a couple of tickets here that I want to give away. Dan, can we do this? And look, this is this Thursday. I mean, some of you people P.O.'d me. Can you P.O.'d me? Oh, I don't want to say the word, even though you can. All right, I'll say it. You pissed me off because you won these prizes, and then you didn't come pick them up. So we gave them to our friends. The hell with you. Anyways, I've got two tickets. They're $5 tickets, but stupid me, I paid $10 a piece for them. There are tickets to the world premiere of a documentary called Home of the Brave. It's a new documentary which tells the extraordinary story of Viola Liuzzo and her effect on the civil rights movement of the 1960s. She was from Detroit. She was 39 years old. She was the wife of a Teamster, the mother of five, and she was shot and killed by a car full of Klansmen shortly after she attended Martin Luther King's historic march on Montgomery in 1965. And the filmmakers are going to be at the showing at the Detroit Institute of Arts. Now, it's 7:30. General admission is $5. Why did I pay $10 a piece for them? Because it's also a fundraising event for the Michigan Coalition for Human Rights. You can go to mchr.org, mchr.org. So, I don't know. I'll tell you what, Dan. Why don't you do this? Why don't you choose, just kind of punch through... the calls that we already have waiting. We'll do it that way. And I never can think of a good way to do this because our phones are already all filled at 313-298-WRIF. If you want two tickets for Home of the Brave, Thursday, September 30th, 7:30 p.m., Detroit Institute of Arts, you enter on John R. And this ought to be pretty moving. I can't go. I've got something else, previous event, but I just wanted to buy them to support them. So, you know, I'm giving you $20 or worth of tickets. How about this, Dan? You figure out how to do it. You got to pick them up by Wednesday, because if you don't pick them up by Wednesday, here at WRIF, I'm coming and getting them and giving them to a friend. Or I'll send somebody down there with them and give them to people walking up at the box office. All right, let's take our first caller right now. Hi, WRIF, you're on the air. Good evening.
Oh, excuse me, Peter. I apologize. Your first half hour is definitely a cure for insomnia. This is funky, by the way.
You know, you're just too much of a bore. Give me another call. Dan, can you give me another call? Just there's something about his snide, snarky way. I don't even mind people insulting me. They're a jerk. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing good.
It's my first time calling.
Welcome.
First time listening to this show. The only discussion that I want to have with you is, you know, being an American, there's a lot of pride that goes on around here. And you were saying that the war in Iraq is something that we shouldn't be involved with, should have pulled out, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Losing American lives is the most important thing to our country. And to say that we don't belong there, we're already involved with it. And
no matter how much of a mistake it is, we ought to still just go on?
Well, we already jumped in with both feet.
Well, I agree with you. In fact, I wouldn't say we've jumped in with both feet, because after the election in November and December, Bush is planning to then jump in with both feet. There's a bumper sticker out. I don't know how old you are, but there's a bumper sticker out that says Bush 2004, the draft 2005. There's not enough troops to fight and win this.
Well, one person was killed. An American person was killed. So we got to look into it deeper than just saying, okay, let's pull out and let's ignore that the fact even happened. Our country was attacked, and
well, it wasn't attacked by Iraq. Iraq didn't have anything to do with it. So what has happened, though, is the diversion from finding the people and the main person that perpetrated this. I mean, they were taking, as late as, or as early, I guess, as November 2002, Bush was transferring needed material out of Afghanistan, where they could have been looking for Osama bin Forgotten, and sending it over to prepare for this invasion of Iraq. This is a total diversion from what was really threatening us, don't you think?
Well, I do, but there's a problem there as well. I mean, you hear about young women being raped, guys getting their ears and their tongues cut off because of a disagreement with the government. There was obviously a problem there. The U.S. decided that, okay, well, not so much the U.S., George Bush and the U.S. decided, okay, we got to go in there and try to fix this.
Wait, no. Come on, you're rewriting history. Why did the United States invade Iraq? It didn't have anything to do with tongues being cut off. I mean, Saddam Hussein was cutting out tongues when the Rumsfeld was over there in the late 80s shaking his hand.
Our government told us that, you know, there may be the potential that they can, you know, zap us or...
Yeah, they said they had weapons. Yeah.
Weapons of mass destruction, et cetera, et cetera.
Turned out not to be the case, though.
Well, I mean, we don't know for sure.
Well, yeah, we do. What do you mean? We doesn't say all of Bush's inspectors, people sent there by Bush, the UN inspectors, and Bush's own inspectors said there's no weapons of mass destruction. There isn't any. It was a total, at best, a hideous mistake based on misinformation or a set of purposeful lies. As part of a long-standing agenda and part of a political maneuver to rally everybody around a war. Well, now it's just caving in on Bush, and he's still trying to put forth this happy face where everything's going to hell.
Well, it's very expensive for us.
You and me.
There's people over there that can go to sleep tonight.
No, they can't. Their cities are being bombed by U.S. jets. There's been monstrous destruction because of U.S. weaponry. There's been thousands and thousands of civilian casualties. The infrastructure is deteriorating worse every day. Life has deteriorated significantly since the invasion. Wouldn't you think it would if there are 160,000 people and maybe, who knows, 25,000 guerrillas fighting a war? Things are down the drain there. Even the Republicans say that.
So you're thinking we shouldn't have any involvement there at all?
Listen, I have no idea what is possible there since Bush has messed it up so badly. I mean, we're damned if we stay in there. The Iraqi people are damned if we stay in there. And if we get out, the Iraqi, the whole Iraq may fall to pieces.
But being an American, you know, our guys and our gals are already over there. We got to support them.
Let me ask you this. And, I mean, this may sound like an unfair question. The best way, I mean, I see signs around saying support our troops, bring them home. But how many casualties, in your mind, would you think would be legitimate in order to accomplish whatever you'd like to see accomplished?
I wouldn't want to see one person's life lost.
Well, but we know there's going to be. We know that when they make this major push in November, since you said we care only about our troops, so there's going to be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of more Marines and Army guys are going to be killed. There's going to be maybe another couple thousand brought home with grievous wounds that they'll never recover from. Is that what we want?
We're here to straighten out that country.
Well, I tell you, I just don't think we're not straightening it out. We're ruining it. We're killing people at a rate that is so significant that we're going to start competing soon with Saddam. I mean, maybe he was able to do it at quite a clip because he had support from the United States during the Reagan and Bush administration. But look here. Let me just hear. This is from, where was this? This was Knight Ritter. Operations by U.S. and multinational forces and Iraqi police are killing twice as many Iraqis, most of them civilians, as attacks by insurgents, according to statistics. And it just goes on to talk about the thousands of Iraqis that are being killed. Who gave us the order to go in there and, quote, straighten out their country by killing thousands of civilians?
My point is our guys are there. We're looking out for their best benefit. And, you know, with this radio show that you got going on, you know, I want to give my input, but, you know, when you were just talking here for the last minute, I'm trying to respond back, and the public's not hearing what I want to say. And the point that I want to bring out is, okay, a lot of these guys didn't want to go there by choice.
Right.
George Bush decided, okay, we're going to go in. And we're going to jump in with both feet.
All right. Well, we're not in with both. We went through that. We're not in with both feet yet. He intends to go in with both feet after the elections. And we may need a draft in 2005 because even the National Guard recruitments are like 5,000 below what they need. I mean, who's going to say, oh, I got an idea. Let's join up the military right now. Maybe I can go to Iraq or Afghanistan. I mean, the Republicans are all saying this war has been run badly. It's a mistake. It was underestimated how many troops were necessary. It was a diversion from the war against, Al-Qaeda.
It's a lot more costly than we originally thought. But
so no matter how many people it's going to take, well, what about 58,000? Would that be all right?
I mean, one's too many.
One's too many. Well, I would agree with that. All right, thank you. And you say you didn't get a chance to talk. I'd say you got about three or four times longer than most callers get. But thank you. Thank you for joining us. Please call again. Oh, I don't think that's it. Here it is.
This is the Riff Award-winning Night Call with Peter Werby. You can call in at 313-298-WRIF. Peter will return with more of your calls in just a moment.
Hey, it's late night. I'm David Hall reporting for the Mortgage Experts at Rock Financial. The Mortgage Experts exclusive quick and easy loan is a fan favorite of thousands of Rock Financial clients who are self-employed, paid on commission, or even in between jobs. And even late night, you can find out the information you need right now at rockfinancial.com. Rock Financial's quick and easy loan, no pay stubs, no W-2s, no tax returns required. You can close in as little as 10 days. Find out more. Go to rockfinancial.com right now, and the quick and easy loan will let you do a lot of things you maybe thought you couldn't do. Don't wait till tomorrow. Get started right now at rockfinancial.com. Whether you're ready to purchase a new home, refinance your existing home, maybe consolidate some debt, you can find out all the information you need. 24 hours a day, you can even apply online 7 days a week at rockfinancial.com, and the mortgage calculators, well, they're there to help you. Go to rockfinancial.com right now. Find out more about the quick and easy home loan. Rockfinancial.com.
Rock Financial is a Quicken Loans company, an equal housing lender. Details at rockfinancial.com.
Getting ready to talk to your son about underage drinking? Then make sure you avoid the following communication violations.
Yo, yo, yo. What is up, G-Money? I'm... okay.
Adopting a hip tone. Save those attempts to sound with it for the guys in the office. And talk to your kid openly and honestly.
This music sure is cool.
Faking interest in his culture in an effort to bond. Stick to showing interest in him. Something you never have to fake.
Sean, I know you're somewhere in the mall here. Can we talk?
Bad timing. He'll be more likely to remember what you have to say when he's ready to listen. Want more tips? Then check out the free Family Talk About Drinking Guide. Just call 1-800-359-TALK or visit FamilyTalkOnline.com. Responsibility matters. Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Attention car buyers, it's September and Parkway Chrysler Jeep is making room for the 05s by making unbeatable deals on their remaining inventory. Like a 2004 Pacifica for $149 a month. 2005 Town & Country Stow & Go minivans, just $129 a month. 2004 Jeep Liberty 4x4s, just $95 a month. And 2004 PT Cruisers, only $85 a month. Hold the music and check this out. These deals have two things in common. One, they're all under $150 a month. And two, they're only at Parkway Chrysler Jeep during this massive September sale. And only at Parkway can you get an extra $2,500 for your trade-in. Plus, everyone gets employee pricing, and Parkway will get you out of your old lease and into a new one with lower payments. With rebates up to $6,500 and up to $11,000 off dealer demos, you need to get to Parkway Chrysler Jeep and lower your monthly payments like everyone else is doing. September is truly the best time to get a new car, especially at Parkway Chrysler Jeep on Crashing at 16 and a half mile in Clinton Township, where you just show up, sign up, and ride.
Check your local paper for details.
More Night Call with Peter Worthy next on The Rip.
Hurry up, kids. You don't want to miss a school bus.
And I don't want to miss Kohl's busload of savings sale.
Catch Kohl's busload of savings on hundreds of items for back to school. Every jean is on sale, every style, every brand. Like Levi's, Lee, Mud, LEI, and more. Plus, save 30% on Nike athletic shoes, 30 to 50% on graphic tees. And get a $10 reward for every $50 in purchases. See store for details. Kohl's busload of savings sale, Thursday through Saturday, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Kohl's fits your wallet, schedule, style.
At 10, 9 central tomorrow on Lifetime. Vivica A. Fox.
It's all about using common sense.
And Katerina Scorsone.
For me, it's about using a sixth sense.
Star in a powerful new Missing. Tomorrow, a teenager missing since he was a baby is spotted on TV.
It was my son. I saw my son.
For finding him will take every channel the FBI has.
Whoever has that might be the same person who killed your ex-husband.
Missing at 10, 9 central tomorrow, only on Lifetime.
Fasten your seatbelts, Detroit, and get ready for full throttle hockey with your Motor City Mechanics.
Down on the red to the back, and he shoots, and he scores!
Old-time hockey is back
on October 15th.
As your Motor City Mechanics professional hockey team battle their Western Michigan rivals, the Kalamazoo K-Wings, at the Fraser Hockey Arena on Utica Road. Season tickets are on sale now for full throttle hockey with your Motor City Mechanics. Ouch. Coached by former Red Wing and NHL All-Star Gary Unger.
Guarantee yourself great seats for opening night
and great seats all season long by investing in Mechanics season tickets today. Mechanics season tickets are a great way to get your hockey fix. Entertain clients, employees, family, and friends. Motor City Mechanics season tickets start at only $94.
And are on sale now
by calling 866-997-PUCK. Don't miss any of the high-hitting, action-packed, full-throttle hockey with your Motor City Mechanics.
Opening night is October 15th.
And you have got to be there. Order your Motor City Mechanics professional hockey season tickets today. Call 866-997-7825. That's 866-997-PUCK.
All this month, we're clearing out the 04s to make room for the new models. Hi, Christine Michael here for Walt Michaels RV Superstores in Belleville. Now you can get special clearance savings on a 25-foot Spirit of America fifth wheel with super slide for as low as $189 a month. Or get a 30-foot Wilderness travel trailer for as low as $199 a month. And then go wherever you want, whenever you want. Payments based on 20% down, 144 months at 8%. So come to Walt Michaels 2004 RV clearance sale and take advantage of our model year-end savings event. Come and see us. We're on the North I-94 Service Drive in Belleville, also known as the Walt Michaels RV Mile. Or call us at 800-697-2500. We've got an RV for everyone's budget. We'll be looking for you.
This is NICO. This is NICO, the Riss Phone-In Talk Show. Now, here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Welcome back. That's Ariel. Thanks for sending me that, guys. Let's see. Elizabeth writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Michael Moore is set to speak Monday, that's tomorrow, September 28th at 8 p.m. at Central Michigan University. The event is sold out at the arena, which holds 5,200. Not sure how many actually attending. Thought you'd like to know. Yeah. But what? Thank you, Elizabeth. And also, he's going to be at Ferris State tomorrow as well, 2 p.m. And on Wednesday, from what I hear, he's going to be at Wayne State University, part of the 60-city tour, expecting something like 600,000 people to hear him. Oh, where's one more here? Oh, yeah, Matt writes in, nice try to scare the people to vote against Bush by giving them the idea that there may be a draft. Yes, there is some concern over him actually doing it because of some of the actions in the Senate and Congress, but is it really going to happen? Well, Greg from Detroit sent me a long thing about how the draft will be put in for people, and I say people, ages 18 to 26, men and women, no college exemptions. This needs to be circulated around ASAP. But so many people, Matt says, oh, don't worry about this. In fact, according to a column in the Detroit Free Press, rumors of a draft shot down in D.C. The phones at the Selective Service System in Washington ring frequently these days. Sometimes callers are hysterical. Officials of the federal agency responsible for running any future military draft say thousands of people are under the impression that mandatory conscription is imminent. Going to happen right away for men and women 18 to 26. And Janice Hughes, a public and intergovernmental affairs specialist, said, it's not true. We would know. The calls keep coming even after repeated assurances from the White House, the Pentagon, and the Capitol Hill that there is no desire, need, or plan for a draft. So, yeah, you can rest assured. If these politicians say that, come on. There, Bertolt Brecht, the German playwright who did the words for Three Penny Opera. In one of his plays, one of the characters says, when the leaders speak of peace, the common people know that the marching orders have already been signed, right? What I was saying earlier, the Army National Guard will fall 5,000 soldiers short of a recruiting goal this year. And so where do you think that's going to be made up? I mean, Bush planning, he said this. They're going to start this major drive to take control of Iraq from the Iraqis that are holding Fallujah and lots of other cities. This is American troops are going to be taking an initiative to take Iraq from Iraqis. Can't have that, right? Well, we've got armed men over there, and a lot of them aren't too swift on fighting, though. This, according to the Washington Post, guard unit to deploy from lockdown to war zone. The 635 soldiers, this at Fort Dix, soldiers of a battalion of the South Carolina National Guard scheduled to depart Sunday, that was this Sunday, for a year or more in Iraq, have spent their off-duty hours under a disciplinary lockdown in their barracks for the last 2 weeks. The trouble began Labor Day when 13 members of the 1st Battalion went AWOL. That prompted a barracks inspection that uncovered alcohol, resulting in the lockdown that kept soldiers in their rooms except for drills, barred even from stepping outside for a smoke. The restriction that continued, with some exceptions, till Sunday's scheduled deployment. The battalion's rough-and-tumble experience at the base just off the New Jersey Turnpike reflects many of the biggest challenges, strains, and stresses confronting the Guard and Reserve soldiers. And Joshua Garman, 20 years old, who in civilian life works in a National Guard recruiting office, says, "Our morale isn't high enough for us to be away for 18 months. I think a lot of guys will break down in Iraq." Asked if he is happy that he volunteered for deployment, "Negative," he said. "I definitely would not have volunteered." So, Bush is presiding over a disaster. He's trying to put the most happy face on it, where the battle deaths keep rising, civilian deaths at the hands of our soldiers keep growing, and we're trying to liberate Iraq from the Iraqis. Young guys from Michigan and Ohio and California and Alabama and Tennessee and New York State are fighting in Iraq to install this puppet government that will allow the oil companies and the other American corporations that are going to benefit from this absolutely unnecessary war that takes more lives every day. Your thoughts, please. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. It's Linda from Harper Woods.
Hi, Linda.
I've called in before, and I listen to you every Sunday, and I love your show.
Well, thank you.
I'd like to bring up a point that hasn't really been discussed tonight, and it's the three men who were kidnapped this week, and the one British guy who is still alive. I listened to Prime Minister Alawi's joint speech to Congress and how he was basically saying the same rosy picture that Bush is talking about. And I have 2 points. First of all, in the first Persian Gulf War in 1991, with all the stuff that I paid attention to on TV and the radio, I never heard of anyone being kidnapped and beheaded and held hostage and all that stuff, and it's just getting worse. And, you know, they say, you know, we can't negotiate with kidnappers because then it'll be like open season. It already is open season, because after Alawi's speech a couple days later, 6 Egyptian men or people were kidnapped, and like 4 other Iraqis from other places in Iraq were abducted. And I don't know if, you know, you can negotiate or not, but shouldn't we be doing something?
Sure, sure. And I was saying to the guy before you, here's a couple of quotes. I won't say who said them. I don't think we're winning. The U.S. is in deep trouble in Iraq. Here's another quote from somebody else. The situation has obviously been somewhat deteriorating, to say the least. Serious mistakes have been made, and most of them can be traced back to not having a sufficient number of troops there. First one was from Republican Senator Chuck Hagel of Nebraska, and the second one was from Republican Senator John McCain. There's a realization on everyone who is serious and not just running for re-election, that the situation is getting terrible. Because, I mean, once we got rid of Saddam Hussein, once the Ba'athist Party has been destroyed, although the United States keeps returning people, I mean, try to find somebody that can rule in place of the people who really want to rule, the Islamists. So they wind up getting these old Saddam figures back in there.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, everybody's worried about the American troops, but, I mean, shouldn't we do something to stop these people from being beheaded? I mean, they're innocent civilians who are over there trying to help and rebuild.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what we can do to help them. I mean, there's never an excuse, as far as I'm concerned, for hurting unarmed people. There's no justification. I mean, everybody has a justification as to why they kill civilians. They're collateral damage. They were intending to hit one target. Well, it's, I guess, more collateral damage. But when the day's over, there's dead women and children and, men, non-combatants. And apparently, what Rumsfeld always say, it's regrettable. That whenever he would, whenever someone would say, well, what do you think about all these civilians are killed? He says, it's regrettable. I mean, he doesn't regret it in the slightest.
Well, I heard on 60 Minutes tonight that Zarqawi is, like, somewhere in Fallujah. And, you know, I know there's, like, a $25 million price on his head or something, but can't we concentrate on getting him?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no reason to think he's in Fallujah. The United States is carrying out bombings of Fallujah, this civilian city. It is a huge city, and hundreds of civilians are being killed, and there has to be some excuse for it. So they're saying, well, they were aiming for a house that had insurgents. I mean, yeah. And then you read the reports, you see the photographs, you see some father holding his dead child, and you think, this is what our country has come to? This is what that caller was saying. We're supposed to be proud of the United States. Not even a matter of you know, our troops or supporting or not supporting. They wouldn't be there for half a second. I mean, it's George W. Bush. Every child that's killed, every mother that's killed, every city that's destroyed. This is all at the feet of George W. Bush, the guy that scammed out of the war in Vietnam.
Yeah, well, I'm going to vote for John Kerry, and because I think he could do a better job, and I just hope Bush doesn't last for another 4 years.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call, Linda. Hey, by the way, this was sent to me by Charles from Ferndale, I think, at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Don't miss the Iraq War Memorial. It's already come to that. Monday, September 27th, until a 6 p.m. ceremony, 1,000 grave markers in the Woodward Median, just north of 9 Mile in Ferndale. So it's Woodward and 9 Mile Road. There's over 1,000 crosses. I saw them being put up this morning. Didn't understand what it was for. Charles writes, this memorial is a breathtaking sight, like an Arlington National Cemetery in the middle of Woodward. Veterans for Peace Chapter 74, Southeast Michigan, erected on Sunday 1,000 grave markers representing the 1,000 U.S. military deaths in Iraq. There will be the usual peace vigil silent protest of the occupation of Iraq from 4:45 to 5:45 right there, followed by the closing of the war memorial at 6 p.m. If you cannot come by then, make an effort to see it sometime during the day. So it's right there right now. If anybody's out and about, you can go to Woodward 9 Mile Road in Ferndale and see that. I'm certainly going to go over there. All right, let's take another call. Hi, it's WRIF. You're on the air. Good evening. It's Peter Werby with you.
Hey, Peter. It's Jeff from Detroit Rock City.
Hey, Jeff. You're going to have another event this Saturday, right?
Yeah, Liberalpalooza number 4.
Liberalpalooza number 4. Okay. And you got your bands all set up?
Well, we've got Omission, the My Dolls, and Drama Deus. And we're short two bands right now. We had a couple people pull out at the last minute.
Okay.
So if anyone wants to come out and play Liberalpalooza, they can give us a call at 586-754-7827. Or just go to the website, which is DetroitRockCity.org. Or the official one for the Liberalpalooza is anyonebutbush2004.us.
Mm-hmm. All right, people can get out there, Doug, to tell people where it is.
It's at 9 Mile and Van Dyke, just north of 9 Mile. And this is going to be the last one before the election. We got two more, though. One right after the election is either going to be the celebration or the death wake.
Mm-hmm.
And this one's the last one to get out and show your support against George Bush before the election.
All right, well, let's send some people out there. Again, I know you'd like me to tell everybody to come out there, but as I said before, if your favorite band is Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, you probably will find this music a little loud for you, right?
Yeah, it's, it ranges from punk rock to alternative rock, all sorts of just rock and roll.
Sounds like that, yeah. All right, Jeff Saxon, thanks for joining us. Go to the website, check it out. You can go to my website, peterwerby.com, W-E-R-B-E.com, and find out the information as well. Call us again. Let us know how it went. Hi, WRIF, you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. John from Ann Arbor.
Hi, John.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
You're welcome.
Really appreciate your show, and you give everybody a chance to say their bit.
Go ahead. What's up?
You had asked where Elk Rapids is, where Michael Moore is going to be. That's up near Charlevoix.
Oh, is it? Yeah, actually, he was there today.
Yeah, okay. And that's a pretty conservative part of the state, and I think it's a pretty good idea that he's going up there to, you know, rile up the people or get them excited.
Yeah.
And he's coming to Michigan Theater Wednesday, and the place seats about 1,400, and it's sold out in about 4 hours.
He's going to the Michigan Theater. Why would he go to such a small venue?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. And I also don't know why he's coming to Ann Arbor, because he's kind of preaching to the choir, but
yeah.
I guess he's just looking to fire up people.
Well, it's not just that. What Michael Moore is trying to do is to get these constituencies that traditionally don't vote very heavily, in this case, students. A lot of times people, they say, oh, well, I'm from wherever else in Michigan or out of state, and I go to the University of Michigan, and I'm not even bothering to vote. So he wants to tell people, contrary to the lies that Foxhole News have been putting out, that you can't vote where you're going to school. It's absolutely not true. You can. But he, according to all his literature, he said that he's not going to speak in venues less than 5,000. So it's hard to believe. I mean, he was selling out the Michigan Theater before Fahrenheit 9/11.
Oh, yeah.
Why wouldn't he be at the Power Center, Hill Auditorium, or Michigan Stadium? See if you guys could fill, the stadium there.
There might be a sporting event there this Wednesday. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think so. Just the Wolverines playing.
Right.
All right. Well, okay. Well, that's good to know. So your information is that it's the Michigan Theater at what day did you say?
It's Wednesday at 6 o'clock, but it's already been sold out for about a week.
I can imagine. All right. Still, we haven't heard from our hometown when he's going to be playing in the Detroit area, but someone probably will. Well, thank you, John.
Well, also, one other thing. I was at a rally at the U of M Quad last Saturday. The Congressional Black Congress was going around, and they'd held rallies in a number of cities in Michigan. They'd done them on that day. They went up to Saginaw. They're in Flint, and you might have heard of Congressman Elijah Cummings of Maryland.
Sure.
He was the big guy that was there, and it was pretty good. About maybe a few hundred people showed up, and I talked to State Senator Liz Brader, and she's pushing to get a piece of legislation through in time for this election to change something that the Republicans in the state House did. I don't know if you've heard about this, but they passed a bill where, especially for college students, they have to have, in order to register to vote, their driver's license address has to line up with where they're registering to vote. So basically,
right,
what it's doing is it's cutting down on a mostly Democratic vote in these colleges and universities. And the
well, if you're now here's the they'll automatically, the Secretary of State will automatically change it. And if you're the address you're registering at is different than the one on your license, they will send you a voter registration card and a sticker with your new address, your current address, your student address to paste over the other one. So it shouldn't be much of a problem. But people should not be deterred. I mean, the Republicans are doing everything they can to suppress the vote. They control a lot of places. They control the voting machines. And these guys will stop at nothing, as we saw in 2000, to steal another election.
Get your clubs ready and head out to Treetops Resort. Treetops, located in Gaylord, Michigan, is home to the number one par 3 course in the U.S. Treetops is proud to be rated the top golf course to play by Golf Magazine, as well as being recognized as being a silver medal award winner. Also ranked by USA Today as the top 10 places to take dad, this is certainly a place where you need to be. There are 4 unforgettable courses, 3 of them designed by top-notch golfers. So call now and make certain you're able to take in the incredible sights of Treetops Resort. Call 1-888-TREETOPS. That's 1-888-TREETOPS. Be sure to ask for the WRIF Stay and Play offer for just $99 during the month of August. That's 1-888-TREETOPS for this special price. Oh, and when you call, make sure you ask for the great prices on ski packages available for this winter. Offer subject to availability. Some restrictions apply. The $99 Stay and Play offer won't last forever, so call now. 1-888-TREETOPS.
Time is running out. Time is running out on the best deal ever, on your opportunity to make an investment that can help you make more money, that will change your life forever. Time is running out on your chance to register for Oakland Community College's fall 2004 semester. Final walk-in registration for fall classes is on August 30th and September 1st. Register on the web or visit any of OCC's 5 convenient campuses to sign up for your choice of thousands of day, night, and weekend classes in literally hundreds of subjects like business, psychology, computer information,
information systems, physics, English, pre-engineering, robotics, and more. If you want to take a giant step to a better life, Oakland Community College is your educational answer. Call or visit your local OCC campus now. They're in Auburn Hills, Waterford, Farmington Hills, Royal Oak, and Southfield. Remember, final walk-in registration is August 30th and September 1st. Oakland Community College. Get anywhere from here.
Fall classes begin September 2nd. This is WRIF.com.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talked to Gene Simmons of KISS. Of course, we had to ask about Peter and our dear friend Ace.
Now, they're both sweethearts. Hopefully, they're taking care of their health, which is more important than being on tour in a rock band.
Well, there's just so many comical aspects to him also. Just the business of him, like that he likes to take things apart, but he rarely puts them back together again. And
kind of put them back together. I've given him a few cell phones. You know, if they didn't, they had a click or something.
Yeah.
Let me fix it. He tears them apart. I'm going, oh, that's what the inside looks like.
Yeah.
I go, okay, can I have it back? It's not working.
Not a chance. There's no way that cell phone's going back together again.
You don't let him do that in your studio, do you?
I stopped letting him do lots of stuff.
Drew and Mike in the Morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff.
101.1. W-R-I-F.
Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Two for Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite riff rock bands.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Two for Tuesday.
Double the Riff Rock.
Double the Riff Prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Two for Tuesday on the Riff. From 101 WRIF.
If it rocks. If it really rocks.
Now, begin transmission.
Here comes the music.
It's a Riff.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the Morning.
Mike tried to get through a review of some art house flick, House of Sand and Fog. Yeah, there's a big budget thriller. Anyway, the Peanut Gallery had a pretty short attention span for this one.
Her dad had this house. She ended up getting the house, and she never opened her mail. And eventually the city took the house from her. She's trying to get the house
boring.
Back. And basically these foreigners moved in and they built a porch higher up so that you could see the water in the distance, and they called it a water view to double their money.
Boring.
And that movie was playing in the theater and was flooded with old Milwaukee, and strippers were drowning in it. I wouldn't step foot inside. Seriously, my wife would need a roll of duct tape and a wheelbarrow to get me to that one.
There's that vicious suicide in the end. I think it's like the Comcast On Demand or something.
If you superglued my genitalia to a cannonball and fired it through the front door of this theater, you couldn't get me to see a second of that.
I would rather wear Stanley Jesse Raphael's panties like a ski mask to see this film.
I would rather pack my full of M80s and squat over a flaming hibachi than see this movie.
Wait a minute.
I would rather have a circle with my dad and grandpa this flaming turd of a movie.
Drew and Mike in the Morning. Broadcast program.
On the Riff.
101.1.
W-R-I-F.
Riff.
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 Rocks.
It's the Riff's Rip and Rock at 9 o'clock. 1 solid hour of your Riff rock and roll request.
All the excitement and fun you can bear.
With Meltdown, the big unit on the Riff.
Your opportunity to take control of the WRIF playlist with the guy who lost control a long time ago.
Call in your Riff rock and roll requests to Meltdown at 314.
Hand it to you. Turn them all into monkey food.
I love these bands, man. Is every band in the world making an anti-Bush CD? I hope so. That was Jesus H. Christ, the band. That's W. A lot of times I know you can't get all of the words, but took all these businesses and turned it into monkey do. Same thing with Cheney. Halliburton, which has been ripping us off big time. Cheney, of course, lying, saying he was getting no money from it whatsoever. He's still getting money. He got like $44 million from it in compensation in 5 years. Got this secret contract while he was the vice president and was still getting compensation. In fact, still is getting compensation. But under his stewardship, they took on, I think it was, I don't have this in front of me, Dresser or Dressler, I can't remember which of the corporation that had all these asbestos suits against it. And another one of them, what is it, Root Brown, K, Root Brown, KRB, is it, KBR, anyway, anything that Cheney and Bush touch turned to garbage, and they've touched the country of Iraq, so that's going down the drain, and they're doing great harm to the United States as well. We were talking about the elections coming up. This is from Reuters. Millions of U.S. citizens, including a disproportionate number of black voters, will be blocked from voting in the November 2nd presidential election because of legal barriers, faulty procedures, or dirty tricks, according to legal experts. So this is America. This is America. Well, how are we going to deal with this? Well, there's a group called Fair Election. Let me see. What is it? Fairelection.us. Fairelection.us. In fact, we're going to run an interview with them at 1:30 a.m. Eastern time, so hang around for that. They've sent or brought in electoral experts from 14 countries who are now in the United States. They've got a 20-person team that consists of distinguished pro-democracy advocates, including conservatives, who have spent much of their lives creating and improving electoral systems in their home countries. So the United States electoral system has fallen into such disrepute internationally that we now have election monitors. Men and women from South Africa and Canada and other countries, let me see if they have, where is this? Brigalia Baum, chairperson of the Independent Electoral Commission of South Africa, former secretary, general secretary of the South African Council of Churches. They've been invited in because of the suspicion that in which elections are held, not only because of the dominance of corporate dollars to both parties, and particularly to the Republicans, but also that we know that votes aren't counted, that millions of people are blocked from the polls, that there's this system, what they call gerrymandering, so they push the boundaries around to benefit the Republicans. And also, these voting machines, what's called black box voting. Bev Harris is really the person with that. You go to blackboxvoting.org, and she says black box voting and the National Ballot Integrity Project Task Force announced Wednesday that they have, quote, been able to hack into both Diebold's and Sequoia voting systems. Those are the voting machines. Harris is the executive director of Black Box Voting. They were able to use a hidden program for vote manipulation so they could change the totals by hacking into the system, which means other people can as well. Diebold is owned by a prominent Republican who at one point said he would do anything to elect George W. Bush. And he said, oh, I didn't mean do anything with the voting machines. So what really has to happen? Al Gore won overwhelmingly last election. Not just in Florida, everywhere. I mean, there was a couple million votes weren't even counted, primarily ones that would have gone to the Democrat. So what it means is that the Democrats can't win by, like, you know, a few thousand. They've got to win by extra millions to compensate for the millions of votes that they've been cheated out of. I'll get back to our calls in just a second. One of the things that authoritarian personalities will never do is say, I was wrong, or I'm sorry. And George W. Bush said he had no regrets about donning a flight suit to give his mission accomplished speech on Iraq in May 2003. Said he would do it all again. Remember, he had that phony stunt that cost us the taxpayers millions of dollars because he was flown out to the USS Lincoln and gave this speech with a big mission accomplished sign behind him. When asked by Foxhole News if he would still have put on a flight suit to declare major combat operations in Iraq over, Bush replied, absolutely. When he gave his May 1st speech, fewer than 150 Americans had died. Since then, more than 900 have. So mission is not exactly accomplished. 313-298-WRIF. I'm Peter Werbe. Hi, this is Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening. Doing good, thanks.
Good. I want to know why do you think we're in Iraq? Why are we there?
Well, I think twofold. I think that since the United States needs control of oil resources there, it thinks it does. The Bush, the oil men who run this country, think that we have to have control of oil resources, and also that it's about bases, and it's and it also it came about in 2002 when Bush's popularity was plummeting that he invented this huge lie that there were weapons of mass destruction, which they knew that there never was. That's why I think. What do you think?
Well, do you think that we're being used as possibly Jewish muscle?
No.
You don't think that's...
I don't even like the sound of it.
You don't?
No. Jewish muscle.
Yes.
Yes.
We are being used as a tool... to help them.
What are you talking about? Israel or Jews?
Yes.
Jews live everywhere. Jews live in
it's
Canada.
Israel.
Oh, all right. So we're talking about Israel. We're not talking about Jews.
Right.
We're because there's enough, you know, because people say, look, there's all these Jewish neocons that were part of the Defense Department, Richard Pearl, and I can't remember who else they all are. But for every Jewish man or woman supporting the war, there's a Jewish man or woman in the anti-war movement. So it's a wash. So their religion doesn't have anything to do about it. Look, we're talking about who controls the world's wealth in North America and Europe as essentially white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. And the only time that they are going to do anything for Israel or anyone else is when it suits their purposes. So if they can use Israel as a hedge against Arab militancy at different periods, if they can try to, you know, give away our tax dollars to Israel in order to try to curry favor with Jewish voters in the United States, they will. But that's why Israel is always precarious, because it's depending on it being, you know, people say it's the tail wagging the dog. It's not. It's the tail. It's the tail of the American Imperial Empire. And at some point... It's going to happen is, like, all of a sudden there's going to be many more Arab voters in this country than Jewish voters, and the Republicans are going to say screw them, and they're going to be on their own. So it's a real crapshoot to depend on American imperial support and our tax dollars to maintain this country, or to maintain so much of Israel's armaments, for instance, and haven't given them billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars.
Right. There would be no Israel if there was no United States or United States backing.
Pretty much so, yeah.
And they're angry with us. I don't care if we pull out of Iraq today. They're still angry with us.
Who is? Who's
the Arab militants.
Yeah. Well, they would be, I'll tell you, they would be a lot less angry if we weren't giving weapons to Israel and supporting their occupation of the West Bank, and if we weren't in the Middle East. In fact, you know what? If we weren't in the Middle East, or we weren't supporting some of the regimes we do around the world, they probably wouldn't care too much about us at all.
They wouldn't care about us at all. If Apache helicopters weren't killing Palestinians, they wouldn't care.
They would care a lot less, don't you think?
A whole lot less.
Yeah.
So I'm in agreement with you on not being there in Iraq, but I think we shouldn't be there anywhere.
Well, I would tend to agree. I mean, I think that mostly the United States has moved historically to secure and support its corporate interest, which isn't the real interest of the people of the United States, and that the United States government has backed the most god-awful dictators throughout the 20th century, the worst torture states, has participated in the overthrow of democratically elected governments. And the idea that we think that we can put in a puppet, that's how it all started in Vietnam, by the way, folks. We figured out that it would be a good president to have, an exile, a Vietnamese exile, and living in a Maryknoll seminary in New Jersey. and made him the head of Vietnam. And say, this is a democratic government. Same thing here. They put in this Alawi, CIA operative, once a member of Saddam Hussein's party, guy that has no real backing outside of people that want to get in on the ground floor of the next racket that's going to rule Iraq. All right, stay tuned. I got actually another piece about our money in Israel you might find interesting. Thank you. You know, here, we think about where is our money going? And we, a lot of people, you know, we always say, well, I like to pay so many taxes. And all that. Well, I don't like to pay taxes because it doesn't go for anything decent. I pay taxes and it goes right to Halliburton. You know, I pay taxes and it goes right to the Carlyle Group, Bush's dad's company. Now, this came over Reuters. The United States plans to, quote, sell, and I put the quotes in here, plans to, quote, sell Israel $319 million worth of air-launched bombs, including 500 so-called bunker busters that would be effective against Iran's underground nuclear facilities. And it goes on to describe what they can do and go penetrate 15 feet of fortifications. Well, again, we're ramping up the amount of armaments in the Middle East, making it more of a powder keg. But Israel doesn't buy $319 million worth of air-launched bombs. We have already given Israel these billions of dollars then for which they use to purchase these armaments. So it's not like we're making this money. We are essentially, out of our tax dollars, giving $319 million to the state of Israel so it can attack other countries. Now, it doesn't want, and the United, and Bush, this could be part of the October surprise, by the way. I hope I'm wrong. So remember, unlike these conservatives that you can call me on November 3rd and say, well, gee, you're really depressed that George W. Bush lost, but at least, Peter, I've got to say everything you said was wrong about what would happen in October. So the three big October surprises. It's on my website. I can't remember the third one. First one is Ashcroft, the guy with 5,000 arrests and zero convictions for terrorism. And so that's, you know, we're going to secure the elections, and there's going to be this big uproar about this. Second thing is Bush will bomb either Iran or North Korea, probably Iran, because North Korea could retaliate. That's why these countries want nuclear weapons, because Bush knew there were no weapons of any substance, and in fact, knew there were no weapons in Iraq when he attacked. If there would have been, they wouldn't have attacked. Because North Korea, it threatens the United States. You attack us and we'll drown you in a sea of fire. Bush says, let's negotiate. So you get attacked if you don't have weapons to withstand Iraqi, U.S. attack. What was the third? Oh, yeah, they're going to catch Osama bin Laden. Yeah, that'll be the third thing. So there'll be a new al-Qaeda plot to disrupt the election uncovered, and hundreds of Middle Eastern people will be jailed. This is all coming next month. They'll be bombing Iran or North Korea, and they'll discover Osama bin Laden. They'll catch him. Osama bin forgotten. I mean, this would be so cynical and so purposely engineered to garner votes that, well, I mean, it is in keeping with everything that these gangsters in Washington do. But, you know, if you say, you know, Pete, you said they were going to do 1, 2, 3, and they didn't do a single one of them, what do you have to say? I'd say, you know, I was absolutely wrong. I mean, I think of these people as capable of anything, but they didn't do this. And those are my predictions. Anyway, so back to, because Bush now is saying, we will not let Iran have the atomic bomb. Why? They let Pakistan and India have it. Let North Korea have it. Why not Iran? Well, Iran, they haven't done anything. They don't like the United States because what the United States did in over the last 40 years to it. You know, it's not like they all of a sudden got some nut on about the United States. The United States is over there. They're not over here messing with us. Iran is not messing around in Costa Rica or Mexico or Barbados or something like that. We're in their face. We overthrew their democratically elected government in 1954. We put in this torture state under the Shah. That's why they hate us. They know we're supporting Israeli occupation of the West Bank against every single United Nations resolution condemning that. makes, in that regard, Israel the same kind of outlaw nation that Bush claimed Iraq was for not following the UN resolution. So maybe there ought to be a coalition of the billing, in other words, or a coalition of the willing, I guess it was, to drive Israel out of the West Bank. You can't occupy other people's territory permanently. You know, that's gains of war. Remember Saddam tried that in Kuwait? Why didn't the same thing happen? Why can Israel have atomic weapons? Israel is probably one of the countries most apt to use atomic weapons. Israel, in terms of atomic weapons, is one of the most dangerous countries on Earth. Because they have the bomb, they're willing to use it. All right. Anyways, so we're sending off another $319 million worth of bunker busters to Israel. And here in the United States, what's going on? Big front page exclusive report in the Detroit News and Free Press today. This is a paper, Detroit News, under this vile character. What's his name? Nolan Finley, Finley Nolan, something like that. Who I'm sure, once again, will probably back Bush. But at least the news staff is on the ball. Working poor suffer under Bush tax cuts. Cash crunch, loss of services outweighs tax gains for millions. Aid shrinks, daycare, nutrition, housing, jobs among hardest hit. Federally subsidized child care, cornerstone of welfare reforms credited with moving more than 2.5 million people into the workforce in the late 1900s is a program in deep financial crisis. During the first 3 years of the Bush administration, child care funding grew 5%, but was not nearly enough to maintain services in a program that was already helping only 1 in 7 eligible children. So this money goes to Halliburton. It goes to Carlisle. It goes to Israel. It also goes to Egypt. This is where our tax dollars are going, folks. This is what, and you know, some of this was under the Democrats, too. I mean, Democrats giving money to Israel and Egypt as well. There's no doubt about that. Seniors await meals. Cuts in food delivery programs leave elderly in limbo and forced onto waiting lists. This is what we do with the elders of our society. We've got billions to give away, right? I mean, are there conservatives and Republicans say, oh, that's okay. Let's give all our money to these big war machines and reconstruction machines once the destruction has occurred. And screw our elderly. Screw the poor kids, right? We don't care about them. Funding dries up for utility assistance programs, leaving many to face soaring costs. Well, maybe they should get retrained and get better jobs. All right, to do that. Unfortunately, though, as the country lost jobs during the past 2 years, $600 million was cut from job training programs designed to provide skills for the unskilled or unemployed. Federal financial aid grants have been frozen even as tuition has spiked, gone up at U.S. colleges. Because we got to give billions to Halliburton and Israel and Egypt and all these places. Voting out Bush isn't enough. Voting in Kerry isn't enough. I don't understand why there are not millions of us in the streets demanding that our money, what we use, or what we earn every day, what we work at some bad jobs, some good jobs, but that command most of our waking hours is frittered away by these politicians in Washington. It'll only get a little better. Nothing could be worse than Bushco. Nothing could be worse other than a fascist dictatorship, and who knows what'll happen with these guys. But as long as we the people are pretty much silent about this, that we grumble or we call talk shows, I mean, at least the left, liberals and the left and what have you, we get out and put 500,000 people in the street and say, you know, end the war. But why aren't there 500,000 people out saying, I want our seniors to have meals. I don't want this money to go to Dick Cheney's company. I don't want our tax dollars to go to George Bush's father's war company. I want it to go to our housing programs that replace dilapidated buildings, which has been cut, rent subsidies frozen, and a public housing crime prevention program eliminated, leaving thousands of poor living in squalor, unsafe conditions, or homeless. That's what's happening in the richest country in the world. You know, I'm glad I didn't see this. My wife was watching television, and some moron at a... And what else can you think of this? Some moron at a George W. Bush rally said, I looked at him, and I could tell he cared about people like me. I mean, can there be anybody more stupid on the planet? And I'm not trying to tell you that John Kerry cares about you as an individual. Here's the difference. George W. Bush, Bushco, is a scam to loot the American people. And we don't squawk much about that. I mean, we squawk, some of us squawk about the war, but nobody squawks about no health care, jobs disappearing, infrastructure collapsing. Let me see, what's this on the back here? The fact that nearly 36 million Americans, 1 in 8, now live in poverty, and tens of millions more are considered the working poor. I mean, there ought to be a demonstration in every city about that, and there isn't. Now, Bush is totally 100% beholden to major financial interests, to corporations, to oil men, people in his class, people just like him. You say, well, wait a minute. Isn't John Kerry a rich guy? Didn't he marry a lot of money? Isn't he a rich guy? What makes you think he cares about the poor? I don't think he does particularly. He's a politician. He wants to be president of the United States. He wants to make great decisions. Like I said, I don't think he could make anyone's worse than Bush. But here's the difference. There, it's a matter of constituency. The Democrats have as part of their base the you know, labor, minorities, poor people, students, young people, people that want peace. So they have to respond to that. Whereas, you know, Bush just puts, you know, terror, God's gaze, and guns. And people go, oh, yeah, well, you know, they want to put, prayer out of our school and put gays in. They want to take guns out of like that. So it's real stupidity. It's real stupidity to think that that any politician at a national level really cares. What you got to think about is what kind of pressure can you put on a political party or politician or legislators to enact something that makes this country better, not worse. The country is getting significantly worse, even if you're doing okay. I did up pretty good during the Bush years. I had a spike upward. Yeah, I mean, I won't tell that story again. So I did okay, but that doesn't mean, you know, it has to do with the woman down the street in a neighborhood like mine that's getting a foreclosure. We're starting to edge toward what it was like in the 30s. I mean, during the 30s, there were a lot, you know, there were people that made money and people who had big parties and lived in big houses, so it wasn't like everybody lived in poverty. But when you start talking about tens of millions of people, maybe I would say, if you'd say the official poor and the tens of millions that the news says are considered working poor, you could be talking 70, 80, 90 million people that live, that are poor in this country. And that's a disgrace. All right, let's continue on. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, my name's Savannah. I'm from Livonia.
Hi, Savannah.
I was thinking about the students and how you were saying that they could just change their address to vote.
Yeah.
And I don't know, sometimes there are certain benefits of keeping their home address. Like, I'm thinking that them passing this is pretty sneaky because...
Some what are sneaky?
It's sneaky because some students won't change their address because it'll cost them financially, like auto insurance, for instance.
Oh.
Other little things like that. And... So I think for the, you know, for this to be required that they vote, they change their address to vote, it's going to cost them.
Well, I don't know. I don't really have an idea about that. And it just occurred to me as you were saying it, though, Savannah, if you lived in, we were talking earlier about Elk Rapids, and you were going to the University of Michigan, why wouldn't you just get a absentee ballot?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. But I guess you can do it. Sometimes... When you're out of state, if you live in New York and you're going to the University of Arizona, you legally can vote in Arizona, but why wouldn't you want to vote in New York? I don't know. So maybe in New York's pretty solid for Kerry and Arizona isn't. Maybe you'd want to do that.
Well, I think primarily, you know, to get out there and vote, it's worth whatever you got to do to make it happen. But I think that there will be some... I am a college student myself, and I just have... taken part in and overheard some conversations in regards to this, and there are students that won't change their address.
Yeah. I guess not. Well, thank you for that idea. I will think about it, and if anybody else has more, they can give us a call at 313-298-WRIF. Thank you, Savannah. Appreciate your call. Hi, it's Night Call, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Yes, hello. This is Tim from Detroit.
Hi, Tim.
Well, I was going to talk about Alawi, but I'm going to kind of change gears here real quick and talk about the tax-cutting bill, quote-unquote, that passed on Wednesday. I think it was 339-65 in the House and 92-3 in the Senate. And as a result of that tax bill, 4 million families actually lost their tax credit for that.
Really?
Yeah, it actually went through. And, I mean, you know, most of the Democrats totally caved in. And, you know, there's an election coming up. So, you know, they pretty much said, we'll just, you know, go along with the Republicans.
Sure. Well, the idea was, and it's always so craven, they probably thought, well, Bush will take the heat for it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, the thing is, I mean, and I've been struggling. I mean, and I'm a swing voter, not so much between Bush and Kerry, but between Kerry and Nader.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, I mean, I understand, you know, politically that I thought I would vote for Nader, effectively just giving it to Bush. But the thing is, even if Kerry gets in there, I mean, he's got the Vietnam question to figure out. I mean, A, does he stay in there?
Get more Iraq, Tim.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I mean. In other words,
sure.
In other words, Kerry's got to figure out, okay, if he stays in, how many more Iraqi will die? There have already been 100,000 Iraqi dead. And how many more Americans will die? Or B, if he just pulls out?
Well, I'll tell you, Kerry is really screwed. In fact, maybe, I've heard some people say, let Bush win because Iraq is going to be such a disaster that he'll take the heat. But Bush, regardless, let's say Bush loses. I think he's going to lose. I'm not sure he is, but I think he's going to lose. But he will be commander-in-chief up till January 20th, 2005. So he will still launch these assaults on these Iraqi cities to free Iraq from the Iraqis, and these major battles will take place and maybe even will be successful if you can consider, you know, another couple thousand Americans dead and tens of thousands of more Iraqis dead successful. What do you call it? Catastrophic success. That's what Bush said. And then he says, and here, you know, so then January 20th, he gives Kerry this poison pill called Iraq.
The thing is, too, another lie that I hear in the press, the mainstream America press, is most of the insurgents, you know, come from Syria and Iran and so on. I mean, based on the press that I read.
Nah.
Check out, I mean, most of the insurgents actually are from Iraq itself.
Sure,
so that's
sure.
Actually not true that, you know, the insurgents are coming from outside.
Well, I think with the more damage that the U.S. does, it's circular. All the mainstream press that I see says that that we are, in fact, encouraging insurgents by the strikes on these cities by you know, that just rampant unemployment. Are you with me?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Something just clicked in.
Also, one thing I want to bring up, you know, I mean, that also that lie that Al-Qaeda and Hussein were connected up before the United States invaded.
Yeah.
Well, in a sense, by invading Iraq, now you almost, Bush almost kind of brought about a fulfilling prophecy, as it were.
Sure.
Now you do have a worldwide jihadist movement. I mean, you have bombings in Indonesia, you have bombings in Kashmir and in India and in Pakistan. And as a result, there's sort of this worldwide network now who effectively considers America a crusader nation.
Yep. That's what George W. Bush has brought us. Thank you, Tim. Appreciate your call. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. This is Rob from Romulus.
Hi, Rob.
Yeah, I agree with your last caller completely. In fact, I think it's designed completely for that case. I think that we're going to wind up fighting a war on three fronts, myself, with what's going on with Bush. I think it's his endeavor and his dad's endeavor and all the big businessmen that they want that Middle East area. Like I said, I called in last week for the very reason that China is in the next 15, 20 years will be the superpower if something's not done, that we have control of that Middle East oil.
Well, we're going to exhaust ourselves for one thing. The will to fight, I mean, obviously the will for the United States to continue the Iraq war, because it seems to be, I mean, some the people that oppose it, and increasingly, I think it's over 50% now, don't see why we are doing that. I mean, one of the first callers said we should do it because we're doing it. I mean, in other words, we're involved, and so hence that's the rationale in and of itself.
Right. I don't agree with him at all. What's going on? In fact, I'm probably a Nader vote myself. But it just seems like the powers to be, with the time and period that we are with, we are depleting the natural resources of oil and that. We want to have control of that region. I think they're willing to sacrifice whatever lies, how many lies it takes to do it.
Wouldn't it be a lot easier? I don't know if you've heard some of the interviews that I have on there. They're later, like between 1 and 2 a.m., so it's getting kind of late. But if we're still trying to hang on to that last drop of oil, and we're going to be fighting other nations for it and eventually confronting a country that is going to need so much oil, China, wouldn't it make sense now, rather than expending all this money on these wars and all these lives, to develop now, right from the ground up, as much alternative energy sources as we can?
Oh, I agree completely. I think after 9/11, we should have been in a better situation to embrace the world instead of being at the most hated country in the world. I think the monies would have been better directed in toward new fuel systems and probably a more general view of people and be humane across the world, because I think America's treated all countries pretty rough, except maybe Europe itself, as far as those countries there. But as far as the human rights problems that we've caused and the lives that we've sacrificed for our gain.
Well, this is back more to the alternative energy thing. I'm giving serious consideration to getting solar panels put on my roof. That is that, so if at some point they turn off whatever, that I'm still going to have power. Now, when I used to broadcast nationally, and one of these, used to go out to Santa Fe every once in a while, and there were these firms, these very progressive firms that sponsored my show, and they build housing projects, or housing developments, that every unit had solar panels on the roof. And they built office buildings with huge solar panels on it. So that you weren't, that you could move further and further away from fossil fuel dependency, which is going to, we've almost reached peak production worldwide. We won't have to be, we won't have to fight wars for oil.
I agree with you completely, Peter.
All right. Thank you, Rob. Appreciate it. Thanks for calling 3-0 here. I'll let this man tell you what it is.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more of your calls right after this.
Hey, it's late night. I'm David Hall reporting for the Mortgage Experts at Rock Financial. The Mortgage Experts' exclusive quick and easy loan is a fan favorite of thousands of Rock Financial clients who are self-employed, paid on commission, or even in between jobs. And even late night, you can find out the information you need right now at rockfinancial.com. Rock Financial's quick and easy loan, no pay stubs, no W-2s, no tax returns required. You can close in as little as 10 days. Find out more. Go to rockfinancial.com right now, and the quick and easy loan will let you do a lot of things you maybe thought you couldn't do. Don't wait till tomorrow. Get started right now at rockfinancial.com. Whether you're ready to purchase a new home, refinance your existing home, maybe consolidate some debt, you can find out all the information you need. 24 hours a day, you can even apply online 7 days a week at rockfinancial.com. And the mortgage calculators, well, they're there to help you. Go to rockfinancial.com right now. Find out more about the quick and easy home loan, rockfinancial.com.
Rock Financial is a Quicken Loans Company, an equal housing lender. Details at rockfinancial.com.
It's party time. Get a real feel of erotic image featuring Michigan's hottest male and female strippers.
Erotic image. Add a stripper to any party and watch your party come alive.
Erotic Image delivers the sexiest and most seductive entertainers right to your doorstep or wherever the party's at.
For your next bachelor, bachelorette, birthday, or any party occasion, give the gift that unwraps itself. Call Erotic Image at 888-41-STRIP.
Erotic Image, the name that says it all. Sexy, provocative, outrageous, but all in good fun.
Erotic Image, 888-41-STRIP.
Surf Erotic Image at eroticimage.com, the official home of Brutal Betty, the Erotic Image Dream Girls, the incredible hunks of Men in Motion, and those naughty awesome twosomes, the wild girly girls. Due to popular demand, Erotic Image has hosts and hostesses to kick off your party. Try one.
Go online and explore the Erotic Image Cyber Showcase. View the dancers, check their prices, and place your order online.
Erotic Image, where image is expertise, and the experience is always erotic.
Call Erotic Image at 888-41-STRIP. That's 888-41-STRIP.
Erotic Image, where image is everything.
A dirty air filter can slow your car's performance. Replace your air filter every 3,000 miles to improve performance and save money at the pump. Stop into Murray's for additional car care tips.
More Night Call with Peter Werby next on The Riff.
King Henry, why are you looking so sad?
My fourth wife is making my life miserable. I was thinking of having her beheaded like I did the others, but these new women's rights groups are giving me a very hard time.
Today, there's a better way to end your marriage. Simply call Adam. Adam is the American Divorce Association for Men. Let Adam take the misery out of your divorce while they protect the rights of men.
Your Highness, the Queen requests an audience with you.
Okay, show her in.
Hello, Henry, my dear. I understand you've hired Adam to handle your divorce.
That's right.
Well, why don't you come up to my chamber tonight and perhaps we could bury the hatchet,
You don't have to lose your home, your children, or your money in a divorce. Call Adam, the American Divorce Association for Men. They answer your questions about divorce at no charge. Call 248-356-ADAM.
101 WRIF Detroit. Call in with your comments at 313-298-WRIF. Now, Night Call returns. Here's Peter Werby.
Have a problem with authority. You believe that you are special, but somehow the rules do not apply to you.
Do you even listen to yourself when you talk?
Thank you. Welcome back. That's Authority Zero. Thanks to Dan Letarski, who put that together. You get the biggest kick out of right. And there's so many great bands out there doing such terrific music. When we get into the new studios, man, this place is just nosediving. I had actually a number of things I was going to play, but we have these CD players, and the CD player, I don't want to explain it all to you. Anyways, it's stuck in there. I can't even get it out. But at the new studios, no more CDs. It's just going to all be digital, right? All digital music files. I keep thinking there's something I'm forgetting to tell you. But maybe we'll just go on. Oh, yeah. At 1 a.m., that's in about 20 minutes, 1 a.m. Eastern time. I'm going to be playing an interview that I did earlier this week with Kevin Boyle. He's written a book about the Ocean Suite case. This happened a long time ago, 1925, and it was when a white mob attacked the house of a black doctor. Black doctor had some friends in there with some rifles, shot out of the house, killed one of the members of the mob. All of the people in the house, including his wife, were charged with murder in Detroit in 1925. Clarence Darrow, one of the century's greatest defense lawyer, came into the city to defend Ocean Suite and his friends and his wife. So it's an incredible story. And then at 1:30 Eastern time, I'm going to be playing an interview that has to do with those election monitors. The fact that election monitors have come into pretty much oversee, not officially, they're not going to have any standing. But you know how Jimmy Carter goes to Venezuela because we don't exactly trust what's going on there. We want to make sure it's on the up and up. Same thing here. That's the state that our elections have gotten to. What a disgrace. All right, we going to line three, is it? All right. Thank you, Dan. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening. Hey, you with me? No, you're not. All right. Shall we try another? All right. Hi, WRIF, you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi. I'd like to apologize first off if the phone cuts out. I'm on a cell phone right now.
Go ahead.
But have you heard anything about the bill in Congress about the draft, the new draft, how they reworked it and everything?
Well, we were talking about that a little earlier. Everybody in Washington says, oh, it's absolutely not true. It's not going to happen. But I was talking about these bumper stickers that say Bush 2004, draft 2005.
I got an email yesterday about it, and I read through the bill, and it hasn't been touched since January of 2003, but that doesn't mean they're not going to work on it. But it's just, the whole thing really is scary, because they can draft anyone ages 18 to 26.
Yeah, they can't get exemptions the way Dick Cheney did from the Vietnam War. Well, here is they deny it. They say there's enough men and women, but enough troops that they don't need them. Well, it's clear it's not true. The National Guard total this month or this quarter didn't come up to it. How many young people are going to say, I got an idea, I'm going to go get an education? Hey, of course, they're going to wind up in Iraq or Afghanistan. And so in order to be victorious in these imperial wars to control oil, they're going to need a lot more cannon fodder. And so I'm not saying for sure they're going to reinstitute the draft because it would be hugely unpopular. See, that's another reason that they're kind of screwed either way. They're not going to have enough troops. And on the other hand, if they put in a draft, you talk about a mass movement. A lot of these young people that either don't care or support Bush, all of a sudden they're going to wind up to be these anti-war activists. You know
what
I mean?
That's what my friend was saying, because I was telling him about it, and he said the only good thing that would come out of the draft is probably the end of the war, because people would protest it more. They would, you know, because everybody's, you know, all for war as long as they don't have to go or it's not their kids going. And
sure.
I don't like that.
Well, let me tell you this. This was right before the beginning of the Iraq War in March 2003. They did a poll. I mean, there was very little criticism during the run-up to the war, so most of the American people supported it and what have you. But 80% of college kids said they supported the war, a war against Iraq. And then they asked the question, what if there was a national draft, and it completely flipped. Only 20% of young people supported the war. So it gives credence to what you just said.
Yeah, everybody's all for it as long as they don't have to be there.
You got it.
You know, it just, you know, and that's the thing about everybody, you know, I hate to say Republicans, but Republicans in general, their kids aren't the ones going. I mean, it's people like me. It's my friends.
Sure.
Know? I'm on the bottom rung of that ladder. I mean, I single mom and, you know, we scrounge for money, but, I mean, bottom rung, and it's my friends going, my people, my group,
yeah.
And, you know.
Well, have you ever heard we use on this show this phrase, chicken hawks? These are the people that want wars. It was like the Bushes and the Cheneys and all the rest of these Republicans, virtually none of who fought in the Vietnam War. It's funny that all of these Democrats who are supposed to be the namby-pambies and always want peace and nuanced approaches to questions, they across the board would be the ones that fought in the war. And then when you go across the Republicans, I mean, there's a few. There's McCain, there's Chuck Hagel and people like that. But you can go to, if you go to my site, and you can check out this Chicken Hawks link, and it's astounding how few of these, big, strong, militaristic, conservative Republicans actually ever serve. Yeah. All right, thank you. I hope we don't get a draft, and I hope if there is, people fight it like hell. All right, thank you. Hi, WRIF, you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. This is Kevin from Romulus.
Hey, Kevin.
I listen to your show a lot, and I like it. And I just saw something in the Detroit Rag this morning.
What's that?
I didn't know if you'd noticed it or not. It talks about how the number of billionaires has, like, seriously increased or something.
Yeah, a lot more.
I guess that's our Bush economy, where some people are getting seriously wealthy and everybody else is screwed. Kind of like, I don't know if you're familiar with the book The Jungle by Upton Sinclair.
Yeah, that had a big influence on me when I was in college.
Okay, and how, like, not so much about the animal cruelty and, you know, all that kind of slaughterhouse issues, more about how, like, his life fell apart because everybody was being treated like scum, and, you know. Economic serial deprivation. I don't know. I just feel like we're headed down the same path.
Well, yeah, and that gets back to what I was saying earlier. We don't do anything about it. And I'm not sure if you said to me, okay, I want to do something about it. What do I do tomorrow? I mean, there's a number of groups working on poverty issues and income distribution issues and what have you, but it doesn't have the quality of a mass movement. I mean, it's all about distribution of income. Like, for instance, the unionization movement in the 1930s was essentially about redistribution of income. Working people had no power whatsoever. They were absolutely at the mercy of the employing class, and what they said was, we're going to organize to get more money so that the employers would have to pay more money. The employers would have less money. The working people would have more money. And that was a big redistribution of income. And it's going the other way now. The middle class is shrinking. The real wages paid have stayed flat over the last generation. But wealth continues to be accumulated. And what the statistic that you cited is very important. or not the statistic, but I can't remember how many more billionaires are. So all of this money is being redistributed, but it's being redistributed to the high side of society, and which represents a pretty small slice, maybe 5% at best.
Right, and my only follow-up to that was, I mean, if we look at, like, many of these larger companies that, you know, sell us a bunch of stuff, like Kmart or Walmart or whatever.
Yeah.
They have production set up in some other countries, so they can make it for, like, $5, for example, and then bring it over and sell it here for $30. But if there's more and more people in this country who don't have the money to even afford the $30, then aren't they, like, shooting themselves in the foot by doing that?
Well, you know, that's the idea. If you destroy the middle class, if you de-wage the working class, who's going to buy all this? Well, as you can see by these models of countries in Central and South America, you can have the country virtually run and operate with only about a third, the upper third of the population of a given country being the ones that are involved in heavily in work that pays well and allows you to consume. Because in the last 30 years, let me see, that brings it back to 74. This is kind of off the top of my head. A Cadillac made have cost $7,000 or $8,000 30 years ago, and now what does it cost? 35 or 40? How much?
50, probably.
All right, I was going to say 35 or 40. Wages have for no one has gone up 6-7 times that much. Maybe our wages have gone up three times, four times that, whereas consumer items have gone up 6 and 8 times. Well, there's a sector of the population that still buys these Cadillacs. So instead of selling X number of Cadillacs for $6,000, they can sell, you know, X minus for 30 to 50. So it works out. I mean, there's logic. And also, when you globalize sales, it works out tremendous sales and tremendous profits. And best idea is Walmart, that can, you know, sells a lot of low slave labor produced low price stuff to poorer people. It's all working for them. It's just, is it working for the majority of the world's population? No.
Thanks for your show, and I hope you keep going for many, many years.
Oh, going to do it, Kevin. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye now. I forgot to announce the winner of the tickets to see this Thursday's documentary, Home of the Brave, at the Detroit Institute of Arts, civil rights documentary, is Brendan Gill from Detroit. Brendan, you pick these up or a large man will come to your house without the tickets. Because you got till Wednesday, Thursday morning. If you don't get them, I'm taking them and giving them to a friend. I don't have the person's name. Yeah, on my website, it refers to the major scandal of the Bush administration. No, not Enron. Remember Enron? Or anything like that. Tax cuts to the wealthy Slaughtergate. The fact that Bush is presiding over this slaughter of American troops and Iraqi people. And this one listener, he went to progressivebumperstickers.com. They'll make bumper stickers to order, and he made one and gave it to me. End Slaughtergate, out of Iraq now. Good work. Okay, we have time for a couple more calls. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter, it's Dan from Ann Arbor. How's it going?
Hi, Dan.
I just wanted to talk briefly about why we went into Iraq.
Sure.
But I had a question for you first. What do you think of the Dan Rather issue? I mean, do you think that it was his fault? I mean, should he be criticized himself, or was it not really his fault, or how do you feel about that?
Well, he ultimately, all those newscasters are just the voices. Nothing that was in those, I haven't been following it that much. Is it universally agreed that those were forged memos?
Well, there were several memos that were that are highly questionable.
Okay.
like in the 90 to 95%.
Okay, everything they alleged is true. I mean, that fact, and the secretary to the person whose signature was, say, forged on that, said that as well. And so, I mean, the fact that George Bush got special treatment to get into the Guard. He mysteriously decided not to take his flight physical. He was then missing from duty from 4 to 6 months, depending on, you know, whose records you believe. And he's gotten a free pass on that. And whoever set this all up, it could have been Republican operatives, maybe not. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. That part of the story aside, more specifically, do you think Dan Rather personally is to blame at all?
Well, I wouldn't. Within a news organization like that, I would say no. And now there's a concerted campaign by the right to get him thrown off the air. I got to say, I never watch any of those national newscasts, so I don't
You don't watch TV.
No, so I don't. My interest in whether he goes or stays isn't real grand. I mean, it was. You remember right up in the run-up to the war, he was saying virtually, you know, reporting for duty in whatever service my country needs, and so he's been kind of you know, blowhard on both ends, as far as I'm concerned.
All right. Well, I'd like to draw a similarity between that and why we went to war with Iraq.
Sure.
Because Bush was sitting there with intelligence from our own people, from the British and from the Russians, and one other country I can't remember. And they all say he's got the weapons of mass destruction. And so, can you hold Bush accountable any more than you can Dan Rather?
Well, I you know, that's an odd analogy. First off, I don't, you know, you can kind of believe whatever suits your purposes. And we know now that Cheney was going over to these departments and leaning on these people. And if you should take a look at this. In fact, it's at the Maple Theater right now, and it's called I don't know. It's got Iraq in it, but it's got one ex-intelligence, you know, United States government intelligence person after another that was in the government at the time saying that there was never any serious reason to believe that. And that the whole idea, this is like kind of the Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity explanation, that Bush got bad intelligence. The buck stops somewhere. And like I said, I don't care if, I mean, if there's a concerted campaign to get Dan Rather off the air because he's this conservative bugaboo, then I would support him. On the other hand, there probably some producer's head will fall. Using your analogy, why wouldn't then everybody involved in the Intelligence Department of the United States and the Defense Department and Rumsfeld and all the rest of them, Powell, why wouldn't they get S-canned? Well, you think about that when I got to end the show. Thanks a lot. Appreciate you being our last caller. Stay tuned. Got some great interviews for you, including one about an incredible murder case in the city of Detroit. But, hey, if you're not in Detroit, you'll still find it interesting.
This is the Riff Award-winning Night Call with Peter Werby. Peter will return with more Night Call in just a moment.
Okay, I'm so excited.
Woo-hoo!
About this super cool weekend at Motown Harley-Davidson and Taylor. It's called Harley Bash, and it's going to be fun, 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 fun.
Yes! Woo-hoo!
Today, catch a classic car and bike show with more than 100 entries and a chili cook-off with more than 30 chefs cooking classic, gourmet, and oh, super spicy chili.
Hot, 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 hot.
Then on Sunday, make sure you see the Hawaiian Tropic Swimsuit Contest, where the top contestants win cash prizes and the chance to compete in the Hawaiian Tropic State Finals.
Woo-hoo!
Hype bands playing all day, including Detroit's favorite Race Street Park.
You guys rock!
There's free food, too. And Monster Truck Great Gravedigger will be on display at Motown all weekend long.
You are one large truck!
Get yourself out in cool 60s garb. It's Harley Bash, baby!
Yes!
Log on to MotownHarley.com for more information. Motown, Harley-Davidson, and Taylor on Telegraph just north of Eureka. And
remember, guys, chicks dig a guy on a real motorcycle.
Get your bike to Motown!
Okay?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the big game. You know how it works. Let's start playing...
Naughty or Nice!
Now, Kim offers to buy you a drink. Is she naughty or nice?
Nice.
Correct. Moving on. Lauren makes eyes at you across the room. Is she naughty or nice?
Hopefully naughty.
The wildest people. The thumping dance music. Now, Metro Detroit's wildest Wednesday night party turns it up another notch. It's the Naughty or Nice contest. Only at Wild Woody's.
Ladies, get to Wild Woody's this Wednesday night and keep the boys guessing if you're naughty or nice.
Join the Rips, Doc Abrock, Doug Podell as the beautiful women of Detroit compete
compete in the classic competition everyone loves, the girl next door versus the bad girl.
Sugar or spice, naughty or nice. Ladies, you'll have your shot at winning cash and prizes courtesy of Jade's Closet. This Wednesday night, it's Wild Woody's for the Naughty or Nice contest sponsored by the Rose Talent Agency.
Wild Woody's on the Gratiot Strip just off I-94 in downtown Roseville.
Wild Woody's.
Good morning. This is Ray Vinson of American Equity Mortgage. If you're hearing our message at this time, it's probably because you're at work, driving around, or can't sleep. If you can't sleep, I hope it's not because of money problems, but if it is a money problem, American Equity Mortgage can help. You're not alone. The average household has a credit card debt of $6,000 or more and paying a fortune in interest. You see, if you're a homeowner, you can use the equity in your home to consolidate all your bills and have only one payment. Think about that, just one new low monthly payment. Your equity can be used to pay off your auto loans, credit cards, and get a new low fixed rate on your mortgage. You will be saving hundreds of dollars each month. American Equity Mortgage specializes in homeowners with less than perfect credit. We have helped thousands of people just like you get back on track. You can call our office right now, and a loan specialist will call you first thing in the morning. That's American Equity Mortgage. Call toll-free, 888-71-LOAN-1, 888-71-LOAN, then the number one.
This is Meltdown back on the radio telling you time to buy a new Chevrolet is now. And the place to buy is the unbeatable dealer. Of course, Joe Pannion Chevrolet in Southfield. September is the month to buy because Pannion needs to make room for the 2005 products. There's something for everyone, and the deals are completely unbeatable. To clear out the 04 products, Pannion has big rebates, plus the GMAC lease pull ahead. If your GMAC lease expires on or before May 31st, 2005, Joe Pannion Chevrolet can waive your remaining payments when you lease or buy a new Chevrolet before the end of the month. You don't have to wait for your current lease to expire. You can get that new 04 or 05 Impala, Malibu, Monte Carlo, or Corvette. How about a new Suburban, Tahoe, Trailblazer, Silverado, or 05 Equinox? Now, and turn in your current GMAC lease without early penalty, possibly even lower your payment at Joe Pannion Chevrolet in Southfield. 866-JOE-1111 for all the details. Don't miss Joe Pannion Chevrolet's unbeatable clearance sale in September. Chevrolet, an American revolution.
This is another Riff Rock concert. The following ad paid for by the Friends of Metallica 2004. Elect the singer Metallica. Matthew and Angel with the World Tour. Friday night, 7:30 at the Palace of Auburn Hills. Metallica live.
Metallica!
In the round, so every seat's a great seat.
That was so close, I could see the sweat. It was so close.
Give me five, give me that one,
ten is high. And Metallica's ripping a different set of tunes every night. The early classics to the present range. Metallica, Madly in Anger with World Tour. With special guest, Godsmack.
Only the best show I ever saw, ever.
This Friday night, 7:30 at the Palace of Auburn Hills. Reserve seats on sale now at cc.com, palacenet.com, the box office, all ticket masters, or by phone, 248-645-6666. By the Friends of Metallica, 2004.
Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Now, more with your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. What a pleasure to be with you, as usual. I think over the years, those of you who have been regular listeners know my interest in history, you know, sort of chopping up that old saying, if you don't learn from history, you are condemned to relive it. And we certainly seem to do that on a regular basis. But still, I guess out of this inherent optimism I have, I hope that if we learn stories from the past, that we can cease to repeat the worst of what has been done in the past. And here is a story that I think is exceptional. It's written in an incredible book. And joining me live in the studio is Kevin Boyle. He's an associate professor of history at Ohio State University. He's written The UAW in the Heyday of American Liberalism, 1945 to 1968. He's a native Detroiter. And his brand new book for Henry Holt is called Arc of Justice, A Saga of Race, Civil Rights, and Murder in the Jazz Age. So we're talking about the 20s. Kevin Boyle, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
And you are a native Detroiter, right?
I am East Sider.
Okay. Well, where did you go to high school? We always ask that.
I went to Austin Catholic Prep. For those of you who are old-time Detroiters, will remember that one.
Okay. Now, this story in the Arc of Justice, and we'll see whether the Arc of Justice came to a just conclusion. This was the case that not only shook the city of Detroit, but actually the United States took into account innumerable famous figures, both nationally and in Michigan, of course. Tell us the story in the broadest outlines, and we'll see if we can go from there. The Arc of Justice, it's the story of?
The story of Dr. Ocean Sweet, who's an African-American doctor, a physician, who in September of 1925 moved with his family, his wife and a baby, into an all-white neighborhood on the East Side. And he understood how scary and risky that was to do. And when he moved into his new house, fearing that white mobs had tried to drive him out of the neighborhood, he brought with him two of his brothers, some friends, and a load of weapons to defend themselves when the white mob came.
Mm-hmm.
Sure enough, the mob came. The second night they were in the house, mob gathered on the street. Rocks were thrown. Somebody inside the house, in fact, a number of people inside the house, opened fire on the crowd, and they shot and killed the white man standing across the street. They were all arrested for murder, and when the case word of the arrest got out, the NAACP announced from its New York office that it would come and defend them. And to defend them, they hired the greatest criminal attorney of the time, and maybe of all time, in the United States, Clarence Darrow.
Who in 1925 had just, lost the Scopes Monkey Trial.
Yeah, exactly, just 3 months earlier.
Yeah.
So he was at the height of his fame, and he came to Detroit for the trial in November 1925, tried all 11 of the people who had been inside the house, and the first trial ended up in a hung jury.
Let's leave people in suspense.
Sounds good to me.
Because one of the things we want them to take a look at your book, Arc of Justice, by Kevin Boyle. Now, this story, there's the simple outline of the Ocean Sweet case. A black man and his friends defends his home. A member of the mob, a Euro-American, is killed. Clarence Darrow and the NAACP come to Detroit to see that justice is done. The Arc of Justice, perhaps, in the title of Kevin Boyle's book. Now, this residential segregation was almost 100% in the 1920s, I assume.
Well, it was just coming together, which one of the things that makes this story so important is that prior to about the early 20s, it was possible for whites and blacks to live side by side. It happened in various parts of the city, and if you were a well-to-do African-American, you could buy a house and live next to white people, and no one much cared. But suddenly, in a real rush in the early 20s, segregation started to come together in Detroit, and Dr. Sweet and his family got caught up in that transformation.
What happened that all of a sudden things went down the drain?
Well, part of what happens is that in the World War I in 1917, 1918, there's a huge influx of African Americans up to all the cities in the North, and Detroit's one of the most popular places. So suddenly the black population skyrockets, and whites begin all of a sudden to worry about whether blacks were in their midst in a ways they really weren't, when there weren't that many blacks to worry about. And then as they worry, then all these parts of the housing market start to say, well, we'll try to make sure blacks don't move into your neighborhood. Banks won't lend African Americans money so they can get a mortgage. Realtors won't show them a house in a white neighborhood. And all of a sudden, segregation starts to harden in a way it really hadn't been in places like Detroit before that.
Now, in 1925, Ocean Sweet buys a house on the east side of Detroit, and tell us exactly where it is, because now I believe it's just gotten a historical marker.
Yep, house still stands. It's on the corner of Garland and Charlevoix on the east side. It's about three blocks north of Jefferson, right around Belle Isle.
Mm-hmm. And there is that marker there. Now, I think it was put up by the Black Prosecutors Association, if I remember correctly.
That's right.
Yeah. And actually, given my interest in the case, myself and another friend were inside of the house. We went there and talked to the owners and weren't quite sure whether or not they were even aware of the house they inhabited. Of course, they were.
They were.
And tell me your experience with going to the house, Kevin Boyle.
Yeah, the house is owned and has been owned since the late 1950s by a wonderful family, the Baxter family. And when they heard that I was working on this book, this was like 3 years ago or so, I got an email one day from Daniel Baxter, who's the son who grew up in the house, and he said, come on over, I'd love to show you the house. And it was just an amazing thing to walk in the exact same place that those events took place to walk up to the upstairs bedroom where Dr. Sweet lay waiting for that mob to attack, laying in the dark trying to calm his nerves, and to look out at what he would have seen out in that corner just made all the difference in the world writing this book.
Now, that's an interesting sense. I mean, I know, for instance, there's walking tours of cities where historical events occurred, and it probably must be particularly so with an historian such as yourself, that you go to a place now where nothing is happening, where it's a calm, peaceful neighborhood, where that history is now almost 80 years old, and yet do you get a vivid sense that of that night and those events by going there?
Yeah, you do. It makes all the difference. Dr. Sweet, give you another example. Dr. Sweet was born and raised in a little town in Central Florida named Bartow, and I went down to Bartow, and I went and walked around the black side of town, still segregated that way, on the other side of the railroad tracks from the main part of town, and I talked to people who knew the Sweet family, and I met Dr. Sweet's baby brother, who was still alive and living in the same, well, not the same house, but the same plot of land that Dr. Sweet had grown up in. And nothing can compare to that, because that's where you really get a feel for what life was like.
Now, maybe because we are telling a story that if you're just joining us, maybe I should reiterate this. The book is Arc of Justice, A Saga of Race, Civil Rights, and Murder in the Jazz Age. My guest is the author, Kevin Boyle. And it's the story that occurred in 1925. A black family moved into a so-called white district on the east side of Detroit. A mob formed one night. Stones were thrown, and suddenly shots rang out from the house from the people inside, the African Americans, who said they were going to defend their home, and they did. The people inside were tried for murder. Clarence Darrow, the famous defense attorney, was the key defense attorney. And the life that Ocean Sweet lived in Florida actually had a marked effect on his decision later on in Detroit. I wonder if you could relate what his boyhood experience was, a terrible sight.
Yeah, Dr. Sweet grew up at the time when Jim Crow, the strict racial segregation, was imposed in the South. He was born in 1895. And when he was 5 years old, in the spring of 1901, there was a murder in his little town. And it is just a little town. A white woman was murdered, and it happened in those days all too often. Immediately, a black teenager, 16-year-old, was suspected of the murder. The kid tried to escape. He tried to make sure he got out of town, but he was captured and brought back to town. And not very far from where Dr. Sweet grew up, the whites of the town dragged this teenager to the side of the river, and they tied him to a tree, and they set him on fire. And obviously within 5 minutes, the boy was dead. Dr. Sweet, later in life, always said he was hiding in the bushes, seeing all of this happen that night. That afternoon. I'm not sure he was. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was only 5 years old, and my guess is that his parents, who were very tightly controlled, kept their kids under tight control, would never have let him out that day because everybody knew what the danger was. But like so many stories you get in your childhood, he believed he was there. He had heard it undoubtedly a million times in black neighborhood where he grew up, and it always scarred him. He always knew what potentially a mob could do. So when that mob gathers outside his house up in Detroit, it's not just a kind of vague fear of what might happen. He's seen in his mind what could happen when a white mob attacks.
Well, he was also very aware of and a reader of the so-called Negro press of
right.
the time. And maybe you could relate to us what had happened following World War I, the number of just horrific race riots, which in some ways weren't even race riots in the sense that we often think, but rather just full-scale assaults on black communities.
Yeah, it happened time and time again. And we're not talking about the Deep South either here. In 1917, there was a major attack by whites on the black neighborhood of East St. Louis. In 1919, there were huge anti-black assaults in Chicago, lasted for days, mobs of whites attacking blacks on the streets, dragging them out of their houses, burning them out of their houses, in Washington, D.C. in the summer of 1919, and in other parts of the country. And Dr. Sweet read about all of those. He was living in Washington, D.C. the summer that there was the violence in 1919 in Washington, lasted for 3 days. And so over and over again, what he had were examples that he'd read about, that he'd seen, that he believed he'd seen, of the terror that white people could inflict on blacks.
Now, in fact, if I'm remembering the testimony correctly, Clarence Darrow asked Ocean Suite why did he bring guns and his friends to use the guns into his house, and he said something like, I have seen what's been done to my people.
That's right. It's exactly right. He put Darrow put Suite on the stand, which he didn't have to do. You never have to testify against in a trial that you're the defendant in. And what Suite said was that when he saw that mob, when he heard the stones hitting his house, he knew that his back was against the wall, and he had that peculiar fear that only someone who knew the history of his race could know. And that was exactly what was happening in his mind.
Now, Kevin Boyle, your book, Arc of Justice, which traces the Ossian, or actually I've been mispronouncing his name all the time. It's Ocean.
It is Ocean.
Ocean,
yep.
Suite. He buys a house in a so-called white area in 1925. He says that he and his friends brought guns into the house because he knew what had been done to his people. You would think that that would have forestalled him from even buying it. If one thought the only way he could live on Garland and Charlevoix in the city of Detroit was to bring in essentially a platoon, an armed platoon, that's not exactly the conditions you would think anyone would want to live under.
Yeah, and he struggled with that. When he first bought the house, when he put the down payment down in the house in the spring of 1925, he didn't know that the danger was tremendously high. His wife, who was also African-American, grew up in a completely white neighborhood. All her neighbors were white, and she took it for granted she could live in another white neighborhood. It was only about a mile away from the one she grew up in. He understood that this was dangerous, but he didn't quite realize when he put the down payment how dangerous it was. Then in that summer, while he was waiting to move in, there were five different racial incidents with blacks being driven out of white neighborhoods. And he was terrified, same way I'd be.
Sure.
And, of course, it crossed his mind to give it up. But to do that was to surrender to the mob. And so he was really torn for that summer.
Well, to some extent, the mob ruled not so much on the street, but its social and cultural and political manifestation in society at large. It's not like one would think that you could successfully defend yourself against whites and then say, oh, well, I did it because self-defense or the right of anyone to live where they want. It would seem on the face of it that Ocean Suite and his friends that were going to defend his home were almost certain to be committing suicide.
Yeah, and they were absolutely terrified that might be. The one hope they had was that if something started to happen, that if they stood up to the mob would back down. That was the one hope they had. But mostly, I think what it was, for Dr. Suite particularly, it was pride. That he had a right to this house, he had earned this house through his hard work, through his talent, and he just couldn't bring himself to give it up.
Now, had there been cases, I mean, one often hears this debate in Europe of European Jewry and what happened to that, and a lot of it was Jews were just rounded up because they were defenseless. There are some famous cases where Jews resisted through force of arms. Are there other cases where African Americans in the 19-teens and 1920s resisted white assaults on their communities?
Yeah, absolutely. In that Washington, D.C. riot I mentioned to you, African Americans stood out at the major intersection in their neighborhood, armed to the teeth, to beat back that mob. And they did, as the white mob attacked one of the nights of the riots. That summer in 1925, in those racial incidents that were over on the west side of Detroit, a couple of the people who were in those houses, they came out on their porches with their rifles, and they said, you come up to my house, you'll pay for it. And I think that was another reason why Dr. Suite hoped, he prayed, I mean, kind of literally prayed, that he could do the same.
You know, take us back to that night in 1925, that you recount in your Arc of Justice book, Kevin Boyle. And so this mob is forming. I assume there is something called the Detroit Police. There is a platoon of African Americans, including Ocean Suite, at the corner of Garland and Charlevoix. What happened? Why wasn't there? Why didn't the police intervene, for instance?
Well, the police are there. Dr. Suite asked for police protection. But he didn't believe that when push came to shove that the police were going to actually protect him. And so there's about a dozen policemen outside in various parts. It's a corner house. And so they're all the way around the corner trying to, at least we think, keep the whites from attacking. But what happens is Dr. Sweet's inside with his wife. Baby's not there. Kept the baby at the mother-in-law's house because they knew how dangerous it was. His little brother, one of his little brothers, is there and some friends. There's another brother who lives in Detroit at the time and had promised to come and bring a friend to help, but he wasn't there yet. And the mob was forming, and then all of a sudden, a taxi cab pulls up in front of the house. Somebody inside the house yells, "There's somebody here." Dr. Sweet looks out the window. He's upstairs. Looks out the window, and there's his brother and a friend in the taxi cab. They get out of the cab, and they race to the front door. And I think that it's quite clear. It's the sight of two more African Americans going into this house. That's what gets the mob enraged, and that's when the rocks start to fly.
And then they're answered by a fusillade. Am I saying the right word?
Yeah.
Fusillade.
That's right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Fusillade. My dad always said, stick with the small words, Pete. A fusillade from this platoon of friends. And am I doing it a disservice by describing it in military terms?
No. These were people who thought very much in military terms. Dr. Sweet had gone to college at a little African-American school in Ohio, Wilberforce. And Wilberforce had the only, basically, ROTC platoon for black Americans in the country. Dr. Sweet was trained in military tactics at Wilberforce, and that's what he did when he set up his defense. He knew what he was doing.
And shots are fired. How many shots?
Nobody knows for sure, because a lot of them were never found, but probably somewhere around 25 or 30 shots.
And only one person got hit?
Well, two people get hit. One person is hit in the leg, but he's not killed.
Yeah.
And another person is hit in the back. The bullet goes straight through him. He's killed almost instantly. So, yeah, in some ways, they're really lucky that they're such bad shots.
Huh. And what happens after that? Are they – because eventually Dr. Sweet and his friends and relatives are and his wife are put on trial for murder.
Yeah, the minute those shots are fired, the police suddenly, who are out in the corner, spring into action. The head of the command of the police force that's there, the head of the precinct, comes racing up to the front door, knocks on the front door, and says, "What the hell are you people doing? What are you shooting for? I didn't see anything happen." Dr. Sweet says, "What do you mean? They were throwing rocks at my house." And the head of the police contingent says, "Well, don't do it again," and starts to leave. And as he's coming down the steps, then one of his patrolmen says, "You know, there's a dead guy across the street." And the police officer turns around, goes inside, and arrests all 11 people, Dr. Sweet, his wife, his two brothers, and all the friends.
And all who are armed, so they didn't put up any resistance.
They didn't put up any resistance at all.
All right. This story is very complex and much to it, and it's a 400-page book, so I don't think in the remaining 6 or 7 minutes are we going to be able to... I don't even want to tell people the conclusion.
I'm glad you're not.
I want people to read Arc of Justice by Kevin Boyle, published by Henry Holt. It's an incredible story. So they're all, usually when you're arrested for murder, no bail, right? So
there's no bail. Eventually, Mrs. Sweet is put out on bail, but it takes a long time. It takes about a month. All the rest stay in prison until they're put on trial.
Mm-hmm. And Clarence Darrow, the famous defense attorney who just had come from losing the Scopes Monkey trial, where he was up against William Jennings Bryan. Yeah. And what's the famous play that...
Inherit the Wind.
Inherit the Wind.
That's good movie, too.
Movie as well, yeah. How did Clarence Darrow get involved, and what's the role of the NAACP?
Well, the NAACP takes on this case. They say, we're going to mount the defense, and they set out to do just that, to put together a defense team to publicize the case to raise some money. It takes about a month, and they're having trouble at it. It's not easy to put together a defense of 11 people charged with murder. And then all of a sudden, one day, they get a letter in the NAACP office from someone in Chicago, which is Darrow's hometown, says, you know, I know Clarence Darrow. Would you like to talk to him? And the NAACP officials say, absolutely. The next day, they're in Darrow's office. Darrow happens to be in New York City, which is end up for the weekend. And they track him down, and they go and they say, will you take on this case? And Darrow says, thinks about it for, I don't know, a couple minutes, and he says, sure.
And it was his last case, or at least his last famous case.
It's one of his last cases. Yeah, he's an old man by this time.
Yeah, yeah. And the section of Arc of Justice that deals with the trial is incredible. The civil rights has to do not with the single defense, of course, of one group
That's
of
right.
arrested people, but a larger concern of the NAACP.
Right. Their overwhelming concern is that they want to find a way to stop this march of segregation in the great cities of the North. They've seen what segregation can do in the South.
Oh,
it's terrible.
Things are getting worse.
And they're getting worse and worse.
The Klan is getting more stronger.
The Klan has swept across the North. There's 35,000 Klansmen living in Detroit in 1925. And there's more than that in Chicago. Klan is huge. The cities are being segregated. Blacks can't find a place to live outside the ghetto. And what the NAACP wants to do is find a way to stop it. And they see in the Sweet Case a way to publicize the great danger of the spread of segregation in the cities.
Mm-hmm. Were they successful, because I know things were, have been pretty segregated, still are here in Detroit, but was it successful for the NAACP, ultimately?
In one way, it is, and that's in terms of raising money. It's out of this campaign that the NAACP creates the Legal Defense Fund, which is, to this day, the heart of the NAACP. It's the money that's used to argue the Brown versus Board of Education case in 1954, for instance. In another way, no, they're not, because what they can't do is stop that march of segregation. And that's the reason why, to this day, the cities like Detroit, like Chicago, like Philadelphia, are segregated.
Hmm. We're almost out of time, but maybe we could talk just a little bit about, I was said at the introduction to this interview with you, Kevin Boyle, about not reliving not having to relive what we've already experienced in the past. Are there lessons here? I was trying to think. Maybe there, I don't know, I should let you, I'm not 100% sure there are. Are there?
I think there's, if not lessons, I think there's stories to take away. And if there's one critically important one, it's that the segregationist cities, which we still live with, still live every day with, has been terribly destructive to our cities and to our nation. And what we let slip by in the 20s, we still have to address. We can't ignore the fact that all too often blacks and whites in America still live in separate and unequal worlds.
Mm-hmm. Maybe maybe a final question. We'll see how long your answer is. this story has fascinated me. I mean, I never, of course, ever got it together to do a book of this impact and research. We're just a couple of white boys from Detroit.
Yep.
Why this fascination that I have and why you with the Ocean Suite case from 80 years ago?
Because I think we are Detroit boys. You grow up in Detroit, but you realize, black or white, you realize how big the racial problem is. And this is a way of talking about it in a very important story.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was a quick answer, so I do have time for another one. Then there was armed resistance on the part of African Americans in the 1950s, in the early 1960s, and into the civil rights movement. Did they know of the Ocean Suite case, like the Black Panthers, or actually, people don't know too much about the Black Panthers for Self Defense, the Deacons of Justice in Louisiana, and another person who spent a lot of time in Detroit, Robert Williams.
Yeah.
Did they know about the Ocean Suite case?
That's a great question. I don't know. There may have been some memory of it. People now come talk to me and say, my father told me about that case. There may have been. But in a lot of ways, it got lost. The story kind of drifted away. And it's funny that here's a major civil rights case that, now 80 years later is getting written about. Mm-hmm. There aren't that many that haven't been written about.
When you spoke to African Americans at the Bartletts that lived in the house where the Ocean Suite occurred, mm-hmm. Is this tragedy? Is it to them? Is it a victory? How do they?
I think it's both.
Yeah.
That there was victory and it's great victory, but there's also the tragedy of what's not accomplished.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Boyle, this is about Detroit, your book, The UAW and the Heyday of American Liberalism, certainly centered on a great power in Detroit. Anything new coming about Detroit?
I'm still working on that one.
All right. Kevin Boyle. Well, actually, let me one more time, of course, tell you, folks, the book. It's Arc of Justice, A Saga of Race, Civil Rights, and Murder in the Jazz Age, The Ocean Suite Case from 1925, an incredible read published by Henry Holt. Kevin Boyle, thanks for having joined me on the Peter Werby Show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Time is running out. Time is running out on the best deal ever, on your opportunity to make an investment that can help you make more money, that will change your life forever. Time is running out on your chance to register for Oakland Community College's fall 2004 semester. Final walk-in registration for fall classes is on August 30th and September 1st. Register on the web or visit any of OCC's 5 convenient campuses to sign up for your choice of thousands of day, night, and weekend classes in literally hundreds of subjects like business, psychology, computer information, information systems, physics, English, pre-engineering, robotics, and more. If you want to take a giant step to a better life, Oakland Community College is your educational answer. Call or visit your local OCC campus now. They're in Auburn Hills, Waterford, Farmington Hills, Royal Oak, and Southfield. Remember, final walk-in registration is August 30th and September 1st. Oakland Community College. Get anywhere from here.
Fall classes begin September 2nd. Get your clubs ready and head out to Treetops Resort. Treetops, located in Gaylord, Michigan, is home to the number one par 3 course in the U.S. Treetops is proud to be rated the top golf course to play by Golf Magazine, as well as being recognized as being a silver medal award winner. Also ranked by USA Today as the top 10 places to take dad, this is certainly a place where you need to be. There are 4 unforgettable courses, 3 of them designed by top-notch golfers. So call now and make certain you're able to take in the incredible sights of Treetops Resort. Call 1-888-TREETOPS. That's 1-888-TREETOPS. Be sure to ask for the WRIF Stay and Play offer for just $99 during the month of August. That's 1-888-TREETOPS for this special price. Oh, and when you call, make sure you ask for the great prices on ski packages available for this winter. Offer subject to availability. Some restrictions apply. The $99 Stay and Play offer won't last forever, so call now. 1-888-TREETOPS.
This is WRIM.com.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
What the hell does Detroit want with Arkansas?
Well, you know, just same old thing. Shoot the breeze, you know.
Damn, I ain't got time to mess you damn people up there. I got work to do here, and you keep calling, raising hell with me. What's the matter? Every week, or...
Well, you become an important part of the program, Delbert. It's actually, it should be a compliment.
Yeah.
What the hell does Michigan want with Arkansas?
I guess this is the first time we've run into you in a bad mood.
Well, you know, I guess everybody gets that once in a while after so much irritation.
Yeah.
Did something happen the last time we talked?
No, I don't reckon. This is the way it has to be, I guess. Let me tell you one thing before you hang up.
All right.
All right.
This is an April Fool's joke on you bastards.
You crotchety old curmudgeon.
I always knew you were... But man, oh man.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff. 101-101. WRIF. Riff. All day Thursday, your walk right in free station, 101, The Riff, unleashes a ticket blitz Thursday. Keep your radio locked on 101 WRIF all day this Thursday for your chance to hook up with tickets to all of the hottest concerts and events happening around the Motor City. Hooking you up like no other Detroit station can. Listen for your chance to win. Then call the Riff request line at 313-298-WRIF.
Don't forget.
You can always improve your chances to win by joining the Riff Cyber Crew today and score your totally unfair internet advantage. Just log on to WRIF.com. It's Ticket Blitz Thursday on the Riff all day Thursday from your walk right in free station. 101 The Riff. You're listening to WRIF.com.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Bill Clinton proving one more time he'll talk to anybody for a crumb of attention as he talked to us again.
What about Jennifer Flowers? I mean, do you regret lying about her on 60 Minutes?
No, I don't. I don't think so. No.
Well, why not?
Because I wanted to get elected, and I just felt like if the nation's first big exposure to me was hearing about me spanking a big strange ass.
Some problems. In fact, great problems. I was reading Michael Moore's website at michaelmoore.com. He says he's going to be happy if 56% of us vote. But that's not the only problem. I'm looking at some headlines here. Millions blocked from voting in U.S. Let's see. Here's another one. Will the Justice Department enforce the Voting Rights Act? Another. Hacking the vote, a real and present danger. So here, where the vote is supposed to be almost akin to a religious icon, there's problems. And joining me is Ted Lewis. Ted Lewis is the project director for Fair Election International. Ted Lewis, welcome to the Peter Werbe Show.
Well, thank you, Peter.
Is and are you a sub-project of Global Exchange or an independent?
Global Exchange is sponsoring this Fair Election project.
That's good, because we love Global Exchange. Medea Benjamin and other people from Global Exchange has been on our program any number of times. All right, well, the most curious thing, even besides on all of these headlines that that I was mentioning, is that we think of elections in third world countries that are so at risk for any number of problems of either violence or cheating that we send in Jimmy Carter and the international observers. Well, now electoral experts from 14 countries have arrived in the United States to begin an unprecedented international monitoring of the U.S. elections. And Ted Lewis, your group, Fair Election International, are the folks bringing us in. Tell us about it.
Well, we decided to do to make an invitation to international experts around the United States electoral process, because we have seen, as working as international election observers in many different countries around the world, that the kind of openness that international observers and people from outside the situation can speak with, and the kind of fresh insights that they often bring, have been really helpful throughout the world in situations that of new democracies and situations where old democracies were challenged. And one of the things that becomes very clear when you do this work around the world is that elections are a challenge everywhere, and there's no place where elections or democracy are a religious icon. We live in a country that came out of a very specific history. Our Constitution, while it did permit democracy to begin to flourish in the United States, also had some very restrictive elements. Women were not allowed to vote. Basically, the Native Americans were not citizens. I mean, there was a very different historical situation. Slaves were completely proscribed from the system. So, obviously, our democracy has been in continuous evolution for more than two centuries, and it's a beautiful thing. We're rightly protective of it, and that's exactly why we think it's important to bring people with this kind of electoral expertise from around the world, because they are friends of democracy. They're people who benefited by the model that the United States has provided over the years, and they certainly don't want to see a diminution of democracy, any kind of lessening of our ability to act as a democracy. And certainly the kind of questions that have been raised in the last 4 years, especially subsequent to the events of Florida, that I think were surprising to many people, have revealed some areas that definitely can benefit by being looked at.
Well, Ted Lewis, it seems, tell me if I'm wrong, it seems like you're almost putting the best face on it. Well-functioning democracies don't need international monitors. It's usually democracies that are in trouble. And from some of these headlines that I wrote about, the fact that we actually, there's an old joke now. I shouldn't say it's old. It's old because it's been on the Internet for a few months. You go into the voting booth with one of these electronic voting machines. You think you're going to vote for Nader, and you say, boy, I can't let Bush get elected, so you vote for Kerry, and the machine counts it for Bush. So we have that kind of fear. We have, according to this article from Reuters, millions blocked from voting in the U.S. This sounds like a democracy in trouble.
Well, I think that there's real large room for improvement in this democracy, and I think that some of the issues that have come along with the way the history of our democracy. For example, the partisan oversight of electoral mechanisms. You know, one of the states that our observers are currently visiting, the state of Missouri, you have a situation which is not uncommon in the United States, where a guy who's the sitting Secretary of State and hence is the man who oversees elections is also running for governor as a Republican in the state of Missouri. So you would find in other democracies around the world that this situation would be prescribed by law. You could not have a person who's, you know, running for office also administering the election in which he or she is running. So,
and essentially counting the votes. I mean, not maybe not hand by hand, but I mean his office is charged with the fair counting of votes.
Exactly, and we're not saying that that Mr. Matt Blunt, the governor, is cheating. We're simply saying that it creates a situation where there's really no checks and balances. And you brought up the issue of the electronic ballots, many people are concerned because in a sort of an unprecedented step, the response to electoral problems or problems with election technology in Florida that was already, you know, by some measures fairly advanced. It was, you know, computer counted cards. The fatal flaw was the CHADS, but they've been replaced now by a technology that doesn't use paper, which prevents the possibility of a recount, even though in many states that's required by law, and that's in the courts in Florida as we speak.
Of course, the most famous case is in Florida itself in the year 2000, where the head of George Bush's campaign in Florida for that year was also the Secretary of State that was responsible for deciding who would be included in the voting rolls. And that certainly, if nothing else, it gives the impression of a lack of impartiality. Well, tell us a little, if you will, Ted Lewis, about Fair Election International and these international monitors who are coming in. Who are they? I mean, I know there's a considerable number of them, but I mean, what type of person is an international elections monitor other than Jimmy Carter?
Well, Jimmy Carter's is well known, and rightly so, for his really good work around the world supporting democracy and supporting elections. Some of the people who are in this country are, you know, nearly as old as Jimmy Carter and have had amazing experience. Horacio Bonneo, who's currently a senior fellow at the U.S. Institute of Peace, has observed elections in 60 countries. He's probably the reigning expert in this group. Another member of our group is currently the leader herself of the Independent Electoral Commission in South Africa. That's a nonpartisan electoral body that oversees elections in all of South Africa. So she's had tremendous experience being an election administrator at a time when a new democracy was being set up and people were being enfranchised in you know, unprecedented millions. So tremendous experience at both the observation level and the administrative level. There's a member of our group who's the Honorable David MacDonald, who's former communications minister of the Canadian Parliament. As a conservative, served under Pearson, Trudeau, and Clark. So people with a wealth of experience and you know, real friends and allies of democracy are on this delegation.
So the inclusion of someone like David MacDonald, who was a conservative, this is bipartisan, that's not even the correct word, really. That it's hopefully above politics. It's not aimed at George Bush or John Kerry.
No, we are a nonpartisan organization, and this every intention of this is to create as nonpartisan a framework as possible, because we feel like that's the only way we're going to be able to focus on these issues of electoral processes, fairness in our electoral processes, transparency, level playing field, all the standards that are used around the world to assess elections. We want to have those be part of the discussion here in this country, and we're very worried that the discussions around electoral reform seem to have been hijacked by the partisan political process. You know, you mentioned the term bipartisan, which is one that really indicates a situation of permanent agreement to disagree. And what we want people to do for a moment is look at these things just as citizens and as people, and look at the processes by which we're governing ourselves, because that's finally what it comes down to, is this is how we govern ourselves, and we want it to be right.
Now, when Jimmy Carter was an observer, a monitor for the recent Venezuelan elections, and he played a very important role, essentially, by saying, yes, they were fair, they did represent the will of the people in the referendum about the Hugo Chavez, the duly elected president. Here, though, like I'm reading now from this September 22nd Reuters article, millions blocked from voting in the U.S., millions of U.S. citizens, including a disproportionate number of black voters, will be blocked from voting in the November 2nd presidential election because of legal barriers, faulty procedures, or dirty tricks. So this all says this is what's going to happen. They've already announced in advance that millions of U.S. citizens will not be allowed to vote. If the monitors see this, it's sort of after the fact, they can say, yeah, there was dirty tricks, or what is the value of this if our democracy is going to be distorted by people being blocked from voting and faulty machines and what have you?
Well, the point of making things better or electoral reform efforts is to address the fact that indeed when you add up all the people who don't register to vote for various reasons, including their being disenfranchised as former felons, which is a law, is a standard that's not applied uniformly throughout the country. In some states, felons can vote. In some states, prisoners can vote. In other states, if you're 18 years old and you bounce a check and are convicted of a felony, you may not vote for the rest of your life. So there are all kinds of ways that people are blocked from voting. And indeed, those are exactly the kind of things that need to be focused on. Whether you can fix everything between now and November 2nd, well, that's going to be very tough. But what's important about having people here to look at it, comment on it, and make sure that these anomalies are part of the discussion is that then people really have a chance to look at, okay, what do we need to reform? What do we need to do to make sure that all the citizens of our country really get a chance to participate in an informed way and cast their votes and govern ourselves on Election Day?
Mm-hmm. My guest is Ted Lewis on the Peter Werbe Show. Ted is the project director of Fair Election International. You can go to fairelection.us and see more of their work. I'll have it on my website as well. And Fair Election International has brought in experts from 14 countries to begin this monitoring of the U.S. elections. And where are they, and what are they doing?
Yeah, currently the observers for this pre-electoral phase of our work have divided into five different states. They all came together in Washington, D.C. last week for briefings with the institutions in our country that run the elections, with people who represent those institutions, as well as don't run the elections, as the case may be, because really the elections are not really run at a federal level, but the federal institutions like the Federal Electoral Commission, the Electoral Assistance Commission, that are set up at a federal level. They also spoke with many experts, and then they divided up into five states, sample states that allow the folks in the delegation to really focus on the issues of how does big money influence our political system? What are the issues of confidence around these electronic ballots? Will people be able to feel confident in the fact that all the votes were counted correctly, and that will there be some way or will there not be some way to verify that post-election? And then the issue that you already brought up of disenfranchisement, of various ways through direct disenfranchisement of felons, through the purging of voter lists, through the huge buildup of inactive voter lists in places like St. Louis, Missouri. These are the issues we looked at to lead us to go to Arizona, where there's a clean money law and something that could be an example for the rest of the country. They went to Georgia, where there's 100% electronic voting machines, one of only a handful of states that have moved 100% into electronic balloting. They're also going to Missouri, where, as I just mentioned, there were tremendous problems with thousands of voters, actually tens of thousands of voters being put onto inactive voter lists, and hundreds, if not thousands, being unable to vote during the last presidential election. Folks are also going to Ohio, which has a number of different issues going on, and is certainly in white heat of the presidential race, as it's identified by almost everyone as a battleground state. And finally, the group will also be in Florida, where many of the issues that became apparent to people both around the country and around the world during the 2000 election have been resolved in some areas and remain unresolved in others. So those are all mm-hmm. things that the group is currently looking at, and they're going to come back from all those states at the end of this week.
Now, certainly no party has a lock throughout American history on corruption and buying votes and fixing elections and all of that. We think of the big city bosses in the last century and into this one, Mayor Daley, the Democratic boss in Chicago, Boss Tweed in New York in the 19th century, and others, although Although, tell me if I'm wrong. Now it seems almost exclusively a Republic, a feature of the Republican Party to want to suppress the vote, even to the extent here in Michigan, a state representative by the name of Papa George, he said that our victory in Michigan depends on suppressing the Detroit vote, which meant the black vote in Detroit, which would be heavily Democratic. He said, oh, gee, I didn't mean anything racial by that. But when you read about Vicki Beasley, a field officer for People for the American Way, mm-hmm. listed some of the ways voters have been discouraged from voting. She says, in elections in Baltimore in 2002 and in Georgia last year, black voters were sent flyers saying anyone who hadn't paid utility bills or had outstanding parking tickets or were behind on their rent would be arrested at polling station. This happens every election cycle. And then she mentioned other incidences as well.
Yeah. Mike, and Vicki did yeah. address our group in Washington, D.C. and brought up a number of those issues with them. So, you know, the group is well aware of that. As far as you know, signing off on the, is this a strictly a Democratic or a Republican issue, I think that you know, there are those who would say that the long term demographic shifts in the United States are going to make us more of a multicultural country, if you will, and that the lock that certain kinds of, you know, politics have had among certain populations in our country may be challenged by that. It certainly, living in California, we've seen a shift where during the 1980s, California was a very reliable state for the Republicans, and at this point, it's definitely you know, at the national level, pretty reliable for the Republicans in a swing state in terms of you know, internal votes. So we're seeing.
Wait. You lost me on that one. You're
California,
saying
California has a growing immigrant
right.
and population of color, and indeed, you know, there have been attempts historically to keep the vote down among you know, non-white people. Whether this is going on now or not, that is certainly the case that you know, some are making. I don't know if this is exclusively a Democratic or Republican issue. I would hope that all the political parties would really be true to the ideals of our democracy, which is to have everyone who's going to be governed by the institutions that they elect participate in doing that. And that's what it should be all about. That should be a nonpartisan issue. It really, you know, and if it's not, then I think, you know, the people have to decide.
Well, the common wisdom is the higher the vote total, that is the number of people participating, the more it benefits the Democrats. The lower, the more it benefits the Republicans. Hence, there are, you know, numerous activities involved in suppressing the vote and even being kind of blatant about it. But you said that, Ted Lewis, that you had done your share of election monitoring in other countries as well. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. I've definitely done my share of election observation, mostly in Latin American countries.
Is it ever dangerous for election monitors?
You know, it can be. I think certainly in the context of the United States, I don't see much danger for election observers. But in countries where elections are part of the resolution of armed conflicts and that sort of thing,
yeah.
It can certainly expose people to you know, conditions of that are while not necessarily highly dangerous, certainly not very, you know, great. There's not a lot of security out there. Mm-hmm. So there have been cases where election observers, as in the case of East Timor, were actually attacked by kind of, you know, losing forces, government military forces that were on the losing side of an election battle. That's about the worst I've ever heard of.
Now, how are you being received here in the United States? What I was indicating at the beginning of this program, whereas I think that given the problems with the electoral system, I think this is an excellent idea that Fair Election International is carrying out as a project. But I could imagine a lot of people seeing this as an insult. I mean, you spoke to why you thought so, but they would ask, why do we need election monitors? That's for the third mm-hmm. world. How have you been received, say, either by elected officials or by the media so far?
Well, Interestingly, the elected officials tend to have a lot of affinity with the people in the group because some of them are elected officials doing exactly the same jobs in other countries. So, you know, they really have a lot to talk about often, and those have been some very interesting exchanges. For the most part, I think the media that we have spoken to has been quite fair, because we're trying to be fair, and we're really, you know, doing our utmost to frame the issues in a way that really focuses on fairness. And for the most part, people go with that. I've gotten a few email comments that have gone, you know, in a different direction, talk about one world government and this sort of thing, which I find, it would be almost amusing if it weren't scary that people really are thinking that way, that anybody who comes from the outside has some sort of, megalomaniacal agenda. It's certainly, you know, nothing even remotely like that. This is a group of good people who came together at an invitation and simply came here to try and help out who are genuinely interested in American democracy, going on the best possible path so that it can continue to be part of a good dynamic for democracy around the world. I think because the United States, though a flawed democracy, is among the oldest in the world and can certainly be argued, and I would argue is the oldest democracy in the world, continuous democracy, any kind of knockback on that affects democracy around the world. We certainly don't want to see anybody losing confidence that the decisions that get made this November and in elections subsequently don't really reflect the will of the people. If people start believing that, the kind of figures that you talked about at the beginning of this program of, 50% of people voting could plummet even lower. And that's a recipe for for disaster and not really being able to make good decisions in our society.
Actually, that was going to be one of my final questions about when we have Michael Moore out on a 62-city tour trying to encourage voting, hoping we'll get 56% of the vote. The Republicans, in my estimation, hoping we get a lot less out, thinking that their logic is that means they'll win. What's wrong with American democracy? I'm glad you're not asking me this, Ted Lewis, because I don't know. But why are we hoping for 56% of the vote? And a few years ago, I mean, it was below 50%.
Yeah, well, I think that 6% would represent many millions of people coming back to saying it's worth participating in this. This is something that we, that people have fought and died for goodness sake, over centuries. And are we just going to abandon it because we don't have the intellectual energy to address it, or we're too cynical to believe that it can be reformed? So I hope that those millions and millions of people do incorporate back into the system, and that we build a democracy that's really based on robust participation. And I think that more people will participate if they start to see that the system really does respond and can represent them. And that's the big challenge. Mm-hmm. Let's hope that whoever wins this election really does respond to whatever mandate it is they get from the people and do something.
Less than 60 seconds for this answer. But Ted Lewis, you've been an international elections monitor. There's an election coming up supposedly in January in Iraq. If you were invited, would you go?
I wouldn't. I spent time in Iraq, and I think that since the American invasion and things are going from bad to worse, I think that it's somewhat of a sick joke to talk about democracy in Iraq these days. The situation has moved so far from that. The United States had real options to let democracy flourish in Iraq. It's passed on most of them at this point. And I think at this point that the people – I talked with some of the people who are administering electoral farce, and I think – I'll just say that's what I think it is.
All right, Ted Lewis, thank you so much for joining us. Ted Lewis is the project director of Fair Election International. If you want to see more about this, you can go to fairelection.us. Ted Lewis, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thank you, Peter.
You're listening to WRIF.com. Get your clubs ready and head out to Treetops Resort. Treetops, located in Gaylord, Michigan, is home to the number one par 3 course in the U.S. Treetops is proud to be rated the top golf course to play by Golf Magazine, as well as being recognized as being a silver medal award winner. Also ranked by USA Today as the top 10 places to take dad, this is certainly a place where you need to be. There are 4 unforgettable courses, 3 of them designed by top-notch golfers. So call now and make certain you're able to take in the incredible sights of Treetops Resort. Call 1-888-TREETOPS. That's 1-888-TREETOPS. Be sure to ask for the WRIF Stay and Play offer for just $99 during the month of August. That's 1-888-TREETOPS for this special price. Oh, and when you call, make sure you ask for the great prices on ski packages available for this winter. Offer subject to availability. Some restrictions apply. The $99 Stay and Play offer won't last forever, so call now. 1-888-TREETOPS.
Time is running out. Time is running out on the best deal ever, on your opportunity to make an investment that can help you make more money, that will change your life forever. Time is running out on your chance to register for Oakland Community College's fall 2004 semester. Final walk-in registration for fall classes is on August 30th and September 1st. Register on the web or visit any of OCC's 5 convenient campuses to sign up for your choice of thousands of day, night, and weekend classes in literally hundreds of subjects like business, psychology, computer information systems, physics, English, pre-engineering, robotics, and more. If you want to take a giant step to a better life, Oakland Community College is your educational answer. Call or visit your local OCC campus now. They're in Auburn Hills, Waterford, Farmington Hills, Royal Oak, and Southfield. Remember, final walk-in registration is August 30th and September 1st. Oakland Community College. Get anywhere from here.
Fall classes begin September 2nd. This is WRIM.com.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talked to Gene Simmons of Kiss. Of course, we had to ask about Peter and our dear friend Ace.
They're both sweethearts. Hopefully, they're taking care of their health, which is more important than being on tour in a rock band.
Well, there's just so many comical aspects to him also. Just the business of him, like that he likes to take things apart, but he rarely puts them back together again. And
I've given him a few cell phones. You know, if they didn't, if they had a click or something,
yeah,
let me fix it. He tears them apart. I'm going, oh, that's what the inside looks like.
Yeah.
I'm going, okay, can I have it back? It's not working.
Not a chance. Not a chance. There's no way that cell phone's going back together again.
You don't let him do that in your studio, do you?
I stopped letting him do lots of stuff.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff. 101-101.
Riff.
Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Tuber Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite riff rock bands.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Who's your boy?
Tuber Tuesday.
Double the Riff rock.
Double the Riff prizes.
Learn it, know it, live it.
Tuber Tuesday on the Riff.
From 101 WRIF.
If it rocks.
If it really rocks.
Now, again, transmission.
Here comes the music.
You're
listening to WRIF.com.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Mike tried to get through a review of some art house flick, House of Sand and Fog. Yeah, there's a big budget thriller. Anyway, the Peanut Gallery had a pretty short attention span for this one.
Her dad had this house. She ended up getting the house, and she never opened her mail. And eventually the city took the house from her. She's trying to get the house
boring.
Back. And basically these foreigners moved in and they built a porch higher up so that you could see the water in the distance, and they called it a water view to double their money.
Boring.
And that movie was playing in the theater, it was flooded with Old Milwaukee, and strippers were drowning in it. I wouldn't step foot inside. Seriously, my wife would need a roll of duct tape and a wheelbarrow to get me to that one.
There's that vicious suicide in the end. I think it's like the Comcast On Demand or something.
If you super glued my genitalia to a cannonball and fired it through the front door of this theater, you couldn't get me to see a second of that.
I would rather wear Sally Kessler's panties like a ski mask to see this film. I would rather pack my
full of M80s and squat over a flaming hibachi than see this movie.
Wait a minute.
I would rather have a circle with my dad and grandpa than see this flaming turd of a movie.
Drew and Mike in the Morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff.
Riff.
The Riff's Rippin' Rock at 9 o'clock.
1 solid hour of your Riff rock and roll request.
All the excitement and fun you can bear.
With Meltdown, the big unit on the Riff.
Your opportunity to take control of the WRIF playlist with the guy who lost control a long time ago.
Call in your Riff rock and roll requests to Meltdown at 313-298-WRIF or email them to meltdown@wrif.com.
The Rippin' Rock at 9 o'clock with Meltdown.
Easy.